Ratings, ratings, ratings. That's all I've heard about since Thursday. All the NXT fans say NXT won, death to AEW. And then we've got the AEW president and one of the company's top stars replying to tweets about demos from bot accounts with 4 followers. I'm going to talk about what it all means and what the real story those numbers tell. And it has nothing to do with either show. Triple H talks to Yahoo Sports about the COVID outbreak, and I want to bang my head against the wall. The worst SmackDown of the year on Friday night. Maybe the worst show of the year. And some New Japan results that may shock you. It's Sunday. You know what that means.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster
conquered the street.
I like fighting a woman.
What is with this company's obsession with ninjas?
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have 2 more hours of this.
Come over here and fight me.
Too many ninjas.
It's not hot.
You haven't been beat up properly.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce? Woo!
This is episode 660 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, July 12, 2020. I am the Solid Monster. Hope you're all having a great weekend. If you missed my Dynamite stream on Wednesday, I am finally cutting the cord. I've had it with my cable and my internet provider. My bill shot up to almost $300. And when I couldn't get a human being on the phone for 4 days, I said, enough is enough and it's time for a change. And that change is fiber optic gigabit speed internet, that and YouTube TV. Although I guess I'm coming in at the wrong time. I see YouTube TV is going up $15 in a couple of weeks. But it's still cheaper than what I'm paying now. Fuck cable. Fuck cable. I should have done this a long time ago. So I'm very excited to get the tech in here in a few weeks to get everything set up. They're finally doing in-person installations again. There was a freeze on that for a while. So we'll get them in here soon and get everything set up. Check out Audible, because Audible is offering you guys, as they have been doing, a hell of an offer. 1 free audiobook of your choosing, and it could be any book you want. There are tons of wrestling books to choose from. And remember, every time you sign up using our link, you are helping out the podcast. So if you're a fan of this show, go ahead and use this link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. You got to put that URL in first. Sign up for the 30-day trial of the service, even if you don't like it, even if you cancel it day 29. I don't think you will, but if you do, you get to keep your 1 free book no matter what. audibletrial.com/solomonster. And if you want to support the show via PayPal, you can always do so on thesolomonster.com. Still the most direct way to do so, entirely up to you. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out as we go through a quick roll call here. Of all the great supporters of this show, this is my roster. I'll put this roster up against any other roster in wrestling. WWE, AEW, Impact, Ring of Honor, NWA doesn't have much of a roster right now. I legit think my roster is far bigger than the NWA roster. But thank you to John Luis Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera. I got scared when I didn't hear Deadpool's name last week. I thought something had happened. So it's good to hear from him. The Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, the Florida Freebird Brian Pissara, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Jerome You're Going Down Eugenio, Raymond the Mountie Medina, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, Stephen Handyman Halistick, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, I hope married life is treating you well so far, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, Josh the Shooter Stockton, Kingmaker, Christos Kalantzis, the Lake George Lunatic, Bobby Blanchard. Sounds like a name you would hear in the old NWA. Up in the Carolinas somewhere. Bobby Blanchard. No relation, I assume, to Tully or Tessa. Super Jock, Michael Cochran, Rockhard Russell Segee, Spencer the Silencer Dunnings, and Maniac Michael Dunnings. Together they are the Dunnings Wrecking Crew. Or DWC for short. They wanted to be a tag team. I like that name. So they are the Dunnings Wrecking Crew. Thank you for the support. DeVenom John Eru. The Cleveland Killer Tyrell Jackson. Eric Blood and Guts Bamford. First time donator. So welcome aboard to Eric. Arnold Modesto. And we have the iconic Vincent Blaze dropping 5 stars on iTunes. He's been listening for 5 years. He says he stumbled on this podcast randomly. And he credits the sound off with the reason why he started his own podcast. So thank you to Vincent. I do love hearing that. And last but not least here, got to shout out Times Square Jonah Firstand. You heard me mention his YouTube show last week called Rewind, Recap, Relive, with new episodes dropping every Thursday, pairing off one ring veteran with one up-and-coming name in wrestling. This week, he's got WWE Hall of Famer Jimmy Valiant appearing alongside indie star Philly Mike Swanson are going to be the guests. He's also giving away a signed copy of Jimmy's autobiography called Woo, Mercy Daddy. Welcome to my world, the Jimmy Valiant story. That's a hell of a title. I got winded just saying it. So to enter, just watch the interview that he did, Jonah did, with New Jack and Dom Truex. Leave a comment in the comment section down below of that video with the hashtag R3Giveaway. That's R, the number 3, and the word giveaway. He's got tons of content on the way. Other names too. Brutus Beefcake, Jake the Snake Roberts. So it's at Rewind Recap Relive on Facebook and Instagram. And of course, you could type that name in as well on YouTube. Pro Wrestling Sheet reported this week that more people in WWE who were present at the Performance Center in Orlando have tested positive for COVID. This was during the most recent round of testing they conducted. Over 1,500 tests they are said to have given in just the last couple of weeks. That brings the total number of positive cases, reportedly, up to more than 30, which includes in-ring talent and behind-the-scenes workers. John Alba, who is a reporter down in Florida, you may see his name mentioned more often on social media. He's been reporting on a lot of sports stuff, but also a lot of wrestling stuff. He is down there in that Florida area. He confirmed Ryan Satin's report says the number that he heard in terms of infected was closer to 40. Not quite 40, but closer to 40 than it was 30. You know, as cavalier as this company seemed to be about testing for so long, or the lack of masking and all that stuff, they're lucky that number isn't higher. I mean, that number's high enough, but they're lucky it's not even worse. Now, we don't know the talents that have tested positive outside of announcers and agents like Renee Young. Renee Young is said to be doing a lot better. Kayla Braxton, Adam Pearce, Jamie Noble. Because WWE is said to have banned the talents from going public with such information. Kind of put a gag order on their talent. But there were a ton of names. All you got to do is read between the lines here. There were a ton of names missing from the recent tapings. A lot of names. Daniel Bryan, Sheamus, Finn Balor, Nia Jax, Otis and Mandy. I guess Tucker, haven't seen Tucker. Street Profits, Austin Theory, it's like he doesn't even exist. Rollins and Murphy come out on Raw the last 2 weeks. There's not a single mention of Austin Theory. Sonya Deville, several others are MIA. They spent 20 minutes replaying a Money in the Bank match on Friday night with Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman. They had a karaoke contest with the ladies. Oh, I'm going to have a lot to say about that later, believe me. A lot of wrestlers obviously tested positive. We don't know exactly who, but clearly a lot of them did because they're very shorthanded. Sheamus hasn't been in the building for the last 3 weeks on SmackDown. He's been via satellite from his home. Then I have to go read Triple H, talk to Yahoo Sports about their response to the outbreak and say, and I assume he did this with a straight face. It's a written interview, so I couldn't tell. It's not on video. But with a straight face, he tells Yahoo Sports, he goes, we've been very successful in that prior to this recent wave, what we were doing was working. We didn't have a massive outbreak. I swear, it's like these people think the tests themselves is what is causing the outbreak. Like, take a test and all of a sudden, you're infected. Before we started testing, we had no positives. Now that we're testing, we're getting a lot of those pesky positives. These people are idiots. These people are morons. You know, Ric Flair, speaking of moronic, Ric Flair, he continues to appear on Monday Night Raw. He spoke with Wrestling Inc. This is what he had to say, because, you know, there's been a lot of criticism lobbed at him and the company. Why is he on the shows, especially a guy as old as him, pre-existing conditions and all that? Is it really wise? You know, Ric Flair is like wrestling royalty, and you're trotting him out there week after week at the Performance Center. Well, this is what he had to say. Or part of what he had to say. He's like, Carano, Ace, Vince himself, I could go down the list of people that are making sure that everybody's life is the best it could possibly be while they're there for the event. I went back the next day. Of course I would. And I've got a pre-existing condition and I'm in my 70s. Let me tell you something. You are safer going to a WWE event than you are going to a Kroger's grocery store. That may well be true now. It doesn't appear that was the case recently. But still, you go to Kroger's to shop for food. You need to go food shopping, right? You don't need to go to the WWE Performance Center. Food shopping is a necessity. Monday Night Raw is not a necessity. And it's certainly not a necessity for this guy in his 70s with a heart condition and a history of blood clots. And I only partially blame Ric Flair for this. The rest is on the company for booking him in the first place. Flair can't help himself. You tell him, hey, Rick, you know, we need you. We need you for this show. We have an angle. We have a story. We need you. What do you think he's going to do? He's going to do whatever they ask of him. WWE should have enough sense on their own. When you have people testing positive left and right, you're missing guys left and right, to say, you know what, Nate? We're not going to tempt fate on this. We love you. Stay home, be with your wife. Randy will be okay without you. And they haven't done that. It blows my mind. Blows my mind. You know, both of Lana's parents, speaking of, you know, stories tied into this, Lana also, we haven't seen her on TV, I think, the last couple of weeks. And both of her parents got COVID. Her mother just got out of the hospital. She just posted an update in the last 24 hours that her mother is finally out of the hospital. She had gone to the hospital. She's an asthmatic, and she's an older person, which is like a horrible combination for something like this. They had to put her on oxygen. Thankfully, it sounds like she's doing better, and I think they are about to release her to a hotel. I guess she'll quarantine there and then go home. Her father got sick as well, but they both seem to be on the mend. Fingers crossed, hopefully. So that's great news. Now, Vince McMahon had desperately wanted SummerSlam in front of a live audience this year. He was trying it every which way. There was talk that he was even open to the idea of pushing SummerSlam for the first time ever back to September. Because technically, the summer doesn't end until what, third week of September? So it would still technically be the summertime. It would just be weird having a SummerSlam in September. They were just looking at every angle and every possibility. How could we do this in front of a partial audience? Because I'm sure he wants to be able to claim that WWE is the first company or first form of entertainment back in front of a live, true audience, like they were after 9/11. They were crowing about that, right? 2 days after 9/11 or whatever it was. Hey, we're the first gathering since the 9/11, as if anybody gives a shit. Like that was the big story. Now, maybe in this country, eventually they will be. But they won't be able to make that claim for all wrestling promotions because New Japan just resumed shows in front of partial crowds over there. 30% capacity, they had between 3,000 and 4,000 people in the building for both of their shows this weekend. But who knows, maybe WWE will be the first to do it here. But it won't be next month. While not officially announced yet, all signs point to our first SummerSlam ever at the WWE Performance Center. And there is a rumor. This rumor is being attributed to the YouTube channel Pro Wrestling Unlimited. So I'm not sure how reliable it is. Fightful, I think, had their own report kind of, I don't want to say backing up the Pro Wrestling Unlimited report, but there is apparently chatter that has gone on about another event a week after SummerSlam. But Pro Wrestling Unlimited claims that there is an idea being batted around in WWE for a network special the Sunday after SummerSlam. So that would be August 30th. SummerSlam is on August 23rd. This would be August 30th. And the two ideas said to be on the table are either for a second week of SummerSlam, which, you know, they did that with WrestleMania, right? They divided WrestleMania, and that was just one weekend. That was back-to-back nights, but they divided WrestleMania for the first time this year into two nights. We had night one, we had night two. Or, possibly, instead, it would be a second all-women's Evolution show. Evolution 2. WWE did Evolution 1 2 years ago and have not done one since. I actually thought that first Evolution show was great. I thought it was one of the best pay-per-views WWE put on in all of 2018. But when you're doing karaoke contests with the women on TV, I'm left wondering why even bother with an Evolution 2. What is an Evolution 2 going to look like if they're resorting to segments like the ones we got on SmackDown on Friday night? And also, you know, keep this in mind as well. The only reason we even got an Evolution show in the first place was because they had Ronda Rousey in the main event. They had Ronda Rousey in the main event to promote the entire event around Ronda Rousey against Nikki Bella. That was the big main event. Wasn't Charlotte against Becky Lynch, even though that was the best match on the show. The main event was Ronda Rousey and reality TV star Nikki Bella. And they promote, and they don't have her. Obviously, they're not going to have her. That's for sure. She is. She looks like she's about to pop if you see any recent photos of her and her sister. So now they don't have Ronda, they don't have any of those women. But the other rumor that is tied into the idea of there possibly being an Evolution 2 is that they either have signed or might soon sign Tessa Blanchard. Free agent Tessa Blanchard, former Impact World Champion Tessa Blanchard, to a deal that they then would be saving her to debut on that show if in fact there was another Evolution show. It does look like AEW doesn't really have any interest in Tessa. They certainly haven't snatched her up yet. It looks like AEW is making a conscious decision to pass on Tessa Blanchard. So I think WWE is probably a very likely landing place for her because they need stars right now. And if they think they have a star in the making in Tessa Blanchard, then they may weigh the pros and cons and say, you know what, whatever her issues have been, we need stars. Becky Lynch is not around anymore. Ronda Rousey is not around anymore. The Bella Twins are not around anymore. Shayna Baszler's not the answer. Vince McMahon has her sampling all of the appetizers in catering in the back. She's busy with that. Then, yeah, I could see them wanting to make a big splash with Tessa Blanchard. All of this, though, is just rumor and conjecture at this point. I don't know how reliable a source of information that channel is, but that is a story that I will be following, and if there's any kind of breaking news or updates on that in the next week or two, I will talk more about it here next week on The Sound Off. Before we get to SummerSlam, though, we have The Horror Show at Extreme Rules. That is the official name of this year's pay-per-view, which I am sure you already know, since the announcers are forced to say that in that exact way every single time that show gets mentioned. You can't call it Extreme Rules. It's the horror show that is Extreme Rules. Poor Samoa Joe on commentary, he's talking about the matches, and you know what the horror show that is Extreme Rules, and I really die a little bit on the inside. They have to say it that exact way every single time because that's the way their firmware is programmed. Drew McIntyre defends the WWE title against Dolph Ziggler. Ziggler says he will not reveal the stipulation for their match until bell time. So we will not know the stipulation for that match until we get to Extreme Rules, which is a week from today. I had thought that a ladder match would be the most likely. You know, ladder matches, cage matches, inside of a building like the Performance Center. Not ideal. It's really not, but I'm sure the two of them together in a ladder match could probably put on a hell of a match. So that's kind of what I was thinking. But then he's teasing, I think Dolph was on the bump, and he was teasing that it's going to be a stipulation that maybe we've never seen before. So I'm thinking maybe it's similar to something that he and Vicky Guerrero did when Ziggler wrestled Edge for the World Heavyweight title at the Royal Rumble that 1 year, where Edge was banned from using the spear. The spear was his signature move. And Vicky, who I guess may have still been the GM at the time on SmackDown, but she banned Edge from using the spear. She took that move away and said, you cannot use that move If you do, you will lose. You will lose the World Heavyweight Championship. And so maybe he, you know, his stipulation here, kind of borrowing a page from that, is that he bars Drew from being able to use the Claymore kick. They've been putting that Claymore over real strong, as they should. So maybe Dolph takes that weapon away from him. We got Braun Strowman taking on Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt Classic in the first ever swamp fight. The first of two. Yes, what appears to be two cinematic style matches planned for this pay-per-view. They have gone out and gotten a stunt coordinator for this swamp fight, which it looks like I think is being taped this week. They're going to be filming it on location. It is a non-title match. The Universal Championship is not on the line. Probably building to a title match with The Fiend at SummerSlam. The other cinematic match is going to be Rey Mysterio, who is wrestling on a handshake deal, we have learned. He is not wrestling with a contract. His contract expired. He's, I guess, working for them under the terms of his expired deal. But he had gone to Vince McMahon. He had gone to WWE management. He had asked for a pay raise. He was rejected. He was rejected and told, you know, the pandemic, we just, you know, cut a whole bunch of people. We're not giving pay raises out to anybody. And so he is operating under a handshake deal. Technically, look, he could show up as Cody's challenger for the TNT title in the open challenge sometime in the next few weeks. I know Cody is wrestling Sonny Kiss this week, but maybe the week after if he wanted to. Technically, there's nothing stopping Rey Mysterio. If Rey Mysterio loses to Seth Rollins at Extreme Rules next Sunday, that Wednesday on Dynamite, Rey Mysterio would legally be free to show up at Daly's place and, hell, challenge Cody for the TNT title. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it's a very weird situation. WWE normally would not, I don't even think, have anybody on television who is, I mean, somebody wrestling without a contract. They obviously have a lot of trust and faith in Rey Mysterio. I'm going to say that a lot of this has to, and look, Rey is a veteran. He's been around a long time. Maybe they just respect him and trust him. But, you know, Vince McMahon has been burned by enough people over the years where I don't think he probably really trusts anybody. Except maybe John Cena. But let's be honest. This has more to do with Dominic. Dominic is not working without a contract. Dominic is training at the Performance Center. They probably see big things in his future. It's Rey's son. I don't think Rey is going to put the knife in their back. Rey's not going to do anything to screw them over because he's got his son to consider. He has to consider his son and his son's future. But the stipulation for this match at Extreme Rules, it's an eye for an eye match that can only end, and I'm quoting WWE.com here, can only end by extracting your opponent's eye. Plan is to do a taped match with CGI effects that simulate an eye being pulled out of the socket. This is the stupidest thing that I have ever heard. You know, I liked the Boneyard match at WrestleMania. I enjoyed Money in the Bank Die Hard Edition. I know not everybody did, but I enjoyed it. And I have no problem with them doing a swamp fight. I'd much rather see a swamp fight with Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt than a frickin' match at the Performance Center. So I have no problem with that. And it fits into their history together, the Wyatts and all that. I get that. But this is just out of control now. I mean, it was out of control when they did the Viking Raiders Street Profit stuff at, what was it, Backlash, I guess it was, and the ninjas and everything else. You know my thoughts on ninjas. That was absolutely horrendous, and it made me ashamed that I even watch this show anymore. Now we're getting CGI eyeball nonsense. You know, at a time when the number of eyeballs on the product is as low as it has ever been, this company can ill afford to lose any more eyeballs, literally or otherwise. This is stupid. Very, very dumb. Asuka defends the Raw Women's title against Sasha Banks. That should be good. Bayley defends the SmackDown Women's Championship against Nikki Cross. Apollo Crews defends the United States Championship against MVP, or maybe it's the other way around and MVP is defending the United States Championship against Apollo Crews, because they just debuted a brand new United States title on Monday night. Who did the unveiling? Not the champion. It was the challenger. So maybe it's the other way around. Jeff Hardy takes on Sheamus in a bar fight. Probably New Day, I'm assuming, will defend the tag team titles in a tables match against Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura based off what happened at the end of SmackDown on Friday night. That's just me assuming here. And I would imagine that we'll get some form of Randy Orton against The Big Show, probably Matt Riddle against King Corbin, after Corbin, I'm predicting, screws Matt Riddle out of the Intercontinental title when he challenges AJ Styles this Friday night. You know, Big Show is just time filler for Randy Orton. It's the bridge for Randy Orton to cross to get to SummerSlam, when he will then challenge Drew McIntyre, I'm sure, for the WWE Championship. I mean, look, who else is there for Drew to even defend the title against on that brand? Who's left? Unless they bring back Brock Lesnar. Who else is there if not Randy Orton? And Randy Orton is doing some of the best work he's done in years right now. I'm not even saying that Orton doesn't belong in that spot. But there's nobody else that really makes sense. So of course it's going to be Randy Orton. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. So I'll probably be going live on YouTube sometime Thursday afternoon. I'm thinking maybe 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock Eastern. Sometime around then for my pay-per-view prediction stream. So we'll be live and super chats open, phone calls at the very end, all that good stuff. So hopefully you can join me then. If you're bored, if you're at work, you can tune in. If that changes the time, I will keep you guys posted on Twitter at Solomonster. And next Sunday, I will be live. You got two podcasts coming next Sunday. Next Sunday is episode 661 in the morning. And then later on that night, after Extreme Rules goes off the air, after the horror show has come to an end, I will be live on YouTube for my full review, and this is pretty cool, this is pretty exciting, another live drawing during my recap stream for WrestleRumble.com. WrestleRumble is hosting what it is calling its Six Marks the Spot Pick'em contest for Extreme Rules on July 19th. We are picking three winners this time. Last month, we picked one big grand prize winner, and the winner got two championship belts. He sent me the picture. It was awesome. Gave two title belts away. Well, this time, we're picking three winners with six championship belts being given away. And it only costs $1 to enter. That's it. It's a buck. It's a buck. It's a young buck to enter the contest. You can enter as many times as you want. There's no limit. For $1 per entry, third place winner, get this, third place winner gets a replica Stone Cold Smoking Skull title. Second place winner will receive two titles, the classic WWF World title, also sometimes called the Hogan 86 belt, and a Winged Eagle replica. And then the first place grand prize winner gets not one, not two, but three championship belts. All United States title. All United States title replicas. The WCW US title, the WWE US title, not the new one that just debuted, the classic one. And the IWGP United States title. All winners will have their belts shipped out via FedEx the very next day, as if you needed any other reason to tune into the live stream next Sunday night. I just gave you six more. So go to WrestleRumble.com and sign up. Impact Wrestling is hosting its Slammiversary pay-per-view next Saturday, one night before Extreme Rules. If I had to pick who I think is going to be the surprise, the big surprise in the main event, and likely the new Impact World Champion, my vote would be for EC3. I think that's the most likely landing destination for him. I think to put him back in that spot as the champion and showcase him now that you have no champion, they lost a whole bunch of people in Impact. You can't go wrong with EC3. So that would be my guess as far as who ends up in that spot. I think we're going to see Heath Slater most likely reunited with Rhino on that show. It's a lock that we're going to get some kind of appearance from Anderson and Gallows. I'm not going to be reviewing the show most likely, but I will have all the news on the podcast next Sunday coming out of that show. on episode 661. I mean, who knows? Maybe I will get a chance to check out some of the show, but certainly any big appearances, debuts, new champions, news coming out of Slammiversary, we'll talk about it on the Sound Off next Sunday. Now, speaking of Anderson and Gallows, AJ Styles was on his Mixer channel. This is where he breaks all the big news. Big gamer that AJ is, all the big news he drops, all the big comments he drops on his Mixer. So he was back on Mixer, and he very briefly addressed some of the recent rumors about him being bullied off of Monday Night Raw. That was one rumor going around, that the reason he left the brand to go back to SmackDown was because he was tired of being bullied and made fun of about his personal beliefs and political beliefs behind the scenes. So he addressed that, and he said, I guess the Flat Earth stuff would probably be among that, which nobody would know, by the way, were it not for Daniel Bryan on that one Talking Smack when he brought up the fact that, hey, AJ's a Flat Earther. And AJ said, I am not a Flat Earther. Oh, was he upset. You could just look at his face. You could tell he wanted to strangle Daniel Bryan on that episode. He has claimed that he is not a Flat Earther. AJ says that he's just heard some things. I always love that. I'm not a Flat Earther. There are some things I've heard. Hey, look, I'm all for keeping an open mind about things for which there may be, you know, an alternative explanation of some kind. A Flat Earth is not one of those things. But he said it's nonsense. He said nonsense. If I was ever being bullied, he goes, I would have handled it myself. You know, I'm a man. I can handle it myself. That's not why he went from Raw back to SmackDown. But he also addressed the rumor that he blames Paul Heyman for not sticking up for Anderson and Gallows before they got released. He said that was not the issue that he had with Paul Heyman. His issue with Paul Heyman is that Paul Heyman is a liar. More specifically, he called Heyman a bold-faced liar. So there was truth to the rumor that he was not fond of Paul Heyman. By the way, AJ Styles calling Paul Heyman a liar is like me saying that Mark Henry is a pretty strong guy. Yeah, no shit. Tell me something I don't know. You know how many people have called Paul Heyman a liar over the years, going back 25 years? I don't have enough fingers on both hands to count. AJ Styles is not the first, nor will he be the last, to accuse Paul Heyman of being a liar. Paul Heyman's been called a liar since at least the ECW days. Even by people who like him, even by people who respect him, they call him a liar. This is hardly breaking news. The question is, what does AJ think he lied about? He said that he's going to let Anderson and Gallows do the talking, or spill the tea, I guess you would say. He's going to let them do the talking for him once their 90 days are up, which should be later this week. All those 90-day clauses and all those contracts for the guys that got kicked loose back in April. I don't know if it's July 15th or July 18th. I don't know the exact. It might be July 15th. But this is the week where all of those non-competes are expiring. So apparently Anderson and Gallows either recorded a podcast or are going to be doing a podcast, and they are going to talk, more about that and explain the situation. So that podcast might drop later this week. But yeah, AJ Styles, no fan of Paul Heyman or a round earth. Boy, you know, he must hate those globes on his intercontinental title on either side of the championship. He should have them replaced with like a square map of the earth on either side. I watched the finals of the New Japan Cup yesterday from Osaka. Osaka Joe Hall, the first major promotion to have fans back in the building at reduced capacity. They had an announced attendance for the New Japan Cup finals of 3,318, which is a pretty sizable crowd. Yeah, you think of, smaller crowds will have 500 people, 250 people, maybe 1,000. Hey, they had over 3,300 people all spaced out throughout Osaka Joe Hall. And I believe that was actually up to around 3,800 for this morning's Dominion show, which I'm going to talk a little bit about later. And these people adhered to the health and safety rules that New Japan put out. New Japan had put some rules out. Among them, they had requested that people not cheer because, you know, cheering, you could spread more droplets that way into the air. They didn't want people to, you know, loudly be cheering and very boisterous, which, of course, is what you want your audience to be. But they said no cheering, so these people instead clapped. They clapped hard all night long. They clapped their little hands together like they've never clapped before. And they created noise that, they created noise that way. And it was great. See, they get to have people back in the buildings and we get empty buildings for another year. Learn to love it, because it ain't going away anytime soon. I love all these people talking, man. When we get to WrestleMania next year, be in LA, WrestleMania goes Hollywood, I laugh. I laugh at all these people who assume that we're even going to get WrestleMania anywhere next year but the Performance Center. I mean, nobody knows, right? It's still only July, but it's like people assume, well, by then, certainly this will all be behind us and we'll have WrestleMania back in a stadium. Are you out of your mind? If you ask me right now, and look, I'm no expert, but if you ask my personal opinion right now, what are the chances? Is there a better chance of WrestleMania being in LA at that big stadium or being at the Performance Center? The answer is the Performance Center. Although maybe they could squeeze actual people in the Performance Center by then. You know, a lot can change between now and next March or next April, whenever WrestleMania is. But don't be assuming these things. I always say, assume the worst. So that way, if things actually do kind of get back to a sense of normal, you'll be very impressed and happy and shocked and pleasantly surprised. Don't set your expectations too high. If I've learned one thing about 2020, and we're only 7 months into this year, this horrendous year, but if I've learned one thing about 2020, do not set your expectations too high. But it was nice to have actual wrestling fans back in the crowd. First time we've had that in 4 months. And there were a bunch of short intermissions in between matches so they could sanitize the ring. Unfortunately, I heard from one of my listeners over in Japan, shout out to Al, he's a teacher over there, and it looks like the number of infections is starting to go up day by day in Tokyo. And some people are worried or starting to worry about the possibility of a second wave over there in Japan, so my advice is just maybe enjoy it while it lasts, because they could easily lock things back down if things continue to go up over there. Minoru Suzuki was pulled from this weekend's shows as a precautionary measure after running a fever. They didn't want to take any chances. Hopefully it's nothing. Corona would not stand a chance anyway against Minoru Suzuki, but hopefully he's okay. It all came down to Evil against Okada in the finals of the New Japan Cup. I guess the writing was on the wall with Evil. If you look back and see what he did elsewhere in the tournament, he wrestled his partner, fellow LIJ member Sonata, in the semifinals. And Sonata stayed within the rules. He respected Evil. He respected his partner, his stablemate. Evil, meanwhile, he resorted to using low blows and steel chairs in order to beat Sonata. And then that carried over here into the finals against Okada. We had tons of ref bumps, interference in that match. Not a classic Okada main event by any means. He kind of feels naked without that championship, to be honest with you. Maybe give him his balloons back or something. Remember when he lost the title the first time and then he was walking around with the long pants and the balloons? And then there were some buildings who would not allow the balloons. I don't remember why. If there was some kind of reason why they weren't allowing balloons in some of the venues. But I remember there's like, he was doing like a promo or something. He goes, it was something like, I don't know what I am without my balloons. Like, I'm lost without my balloons. This poor guy had lost the championship and he had gone mad. He had lost his mind. He was like Pennywise walking around with balloons. Maybe we need Okada to get his balloons back. And please, please take away that cobra clutch that he has been using. It looks awful. It looks just, I think the cobra clutch is a terrible move anyway, but when he puts it on, it just does not look good. Just stop doing it. So we had Ghetto run down to distract the referee. We had Yujiro run in. He slammed Okada, then he scurried off. Evil ended up shoving Okada into Red Shoes, so Red Shoes goes down, the referee's down. And then he gives Okada a low blow. That was the second low blow of the match. Then a third one, he stomped right on his balls. And then he hit Everything Is Evil for the win. So he wins the cup. Naito comes out to preview the two members of LIJ wrestling at Dominion for the championship. And they did the LIJ fist bump. But Evil flashed the Too Sweet sign. And then he laid out Naito. Out walks Bullet Club, applauding Evil, who starts to kick the crap out of Naito until Hiromu runs down. Here comes Shingo and Sanada. Evil is now a card-carrying member of Bullet Club. This was definitely not like that great Kenta turn last year when he betrayed Shibata and he joined Bullet Club. I mean, that was the kind of angle that was as good as I've ever seen. It was masterful the way they pulled that off. And part of that also was I don't think that people were expecting Shibata to get even as physical as he got in that angle. I mean, the only negative is that you watch that and all you want to see is Kenta versus Shibata. And a lot of people, myself included, thought, okay, well, they must be building that to Wrestle Kingdom. And in fact, Shibata is not cleared and he did not wrestle and probably will never wrestle. But what a great freaking angle that was. This was not that. If you want to compare the two. This was definitely not that. But you know, Evil turning on his buddies, this hardly should come as a surprise. The man's name is Evil. You kind of figured he'd be capable of something like this. I mean, if I had a guy named Evil in my faction, I would keep a close eye on him. So you got Bullet Club here. Bullet Club is down a few faces right now. There's no Kenta. There's no Jay White. There's no Tama Tonga. Who else are they missing? Fale? All these people who aren't able to travel because of the pandemic, they're down quite a few people. And I guess they felt they needed a guy to represent the group, and Evil turned out to be that guy. Which brings us to today's Dominion show, which finished up a few hours ago. I have not had the time to watch the entire show, every match in full, top to bottom. But I did have to go and spoil myself and just kind of skip around and watch some of the parts of it because I knew I had to record this show. So I had no choice. I wanted to go into it fresh and I went and I spoiled myself. So if you don't want to know anything that happened on the show this morning, if you have not had a chance to watch it yet, but you're going to go watch it later, you either need to pause this show and go watch it, or skip ahead about 5 minutes or so, because I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but these are spoilers, so again, you have been warned. There were three title changes. Huge title changes on today's Dominion show. Tai Chi and Zack Sabre Jr. of Suzuki-Gun beat Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kota Ibushi to win the... And by the way, what I saw was a fantastic match, and I do want to go back and watch that in full. They are now the new IWGP Tag Team Champions. I'm very anxious to watch the full thing myself and see how it compares to the Kenny Omega Hangman Page against Young Bucks match from the AEW Revolution show back in February. You know, when I see people tossing comments online around like, what a fantastic match, it might have been the best tag team match all year. Now I have to watch it so I can compare, because to me, there is no better tag team match yet this year than Omega and Hangman against the Bucks from Revolution. So if this is as good or better than that, then this must be a hell of a friggin' match. And then we have Evil. Fresh off of his heel turn the night before, he defeats Tetsuya Naito to win both the IWGP and the IWGP Intercontinental Championships. Evil is now a triple champion in New Japan. Evil three belts. He is Evil three belts. He's still got the never open weight six-man titles that he holds with Bushi and, is it Shingo? Of LIJ, right? Not Sanada. So he's got that title. I don't know how they're going to reconcile that. I mean, they got all the belts in that relationship now. Evil is engaged, for those who don't know, Evil is engaged to Io Shirai, who is the reigning NXT Women's Champion. That's four championships and a New Japan Cup between the two of them. Evil and Io are the real power couple in pro wrestling. So the match ran nearly 40 minutes, which just sounds unnecessarily long. I mean, if it was Okada, you would expect that, but that's a long match. Evil has already got a new look. He's got new music. They didn't waste any time with that. And like the night before, tons of interference from the Bullet Club, more low blows from Evil. We had someone in a Bushi mask run in who was definitely not Bushi, and later unmasked to reveal himself as Dick Togo. 50-year-old Dick Togo, making his New Japan debut, was the one under the mask. He choked out Naito. He distracted the referee, which allowed Evil to stomp Naito right in the balls, just like he did to Okada the night before, to win the cup. He hit everything as Evil, just like he did to Okada. And Evil is your winner. Now, here's the thing. After waiting all that time for Naito to win the title back, right? Then the pandemic hits, and New Japan has to cease all shows. They just stopped. They did something that AEW and WWE could not have even fathomed. They stopped running shows. They canceled shows. They were not going to run shows until they felt it was safe to do so. They did the responsible thing. So, up until a few weeks ago, New Japan had not run a single show until, I believe, or since February 26th, I think, or something like that, which was, you know, a month and a half or so after Wrestle Kingdom when Naito won the championships. So this guy becomes a double champion. I mean, they were teasing Naito all these years. I mean, they you know, so many start and stop. Oh, he's going to win. Then he didn't win. What are they doing? They're screwing over Naito. Naito finally wins. And then the pandemic hits. And so he winds up now having a very uneventful, very forgettable run as a double champion. Not his fault at all. I don't fault him at all. It's not his fault. It's not anyone's fault. And not only does he lose one title here, he loses both titles. That's pretty crappy. Now, on the other hand, they just turned Evil 24 hours earlier. They did this big angle where he joined Bullet Club. To have him come out a day later and lose would have taken the wind right out of his sails. I actually think it might have been more impactful to save the Bullet Club turn for this match, where he won the championship, not the New Japan Cup. So Hiromu ran down to make the save after the match. He challenged Evil for both titles. And then I think he said, oh, even if it's one title. And then after the show, Evil accepted his challenge. I don't know if that's going to be for both belts or not. But if it's not, then, you know, maybe, let's say if it's just for the Intercontinental, maybe they split the titles there and just keep the IWGP on Evil. They're going in on Evil. The way they did with Jay White, I guess. Jay White kind of grew into the role. I mean, I know a lot of people, I mean, you talk about polarizing figures. Jay White was a very polarizing figure. There are a lot of people who absolutely hate Jay White, and not in that, oh, he's a great heel kind of way. They don't see him as being somebody at that level of being a world champion or IWGP champion. They think he's boring. They think he's vanilla. There are people who do not like Jay White. They don't get the hype. They don't get it. And then there are people who really like the guy, or feel like he really grew into the role. What a heel. And I will say, you know, Jay White wasn't my favorite wrestler, but he definitely, you could see the evolution in this guy. He turned into a pretty damn good heel, and he's a very good wrestler. So I don't hate on Jay White the way other people do, but I can understand people who say he had no business being the champion. Why are you putting the title on this guy? You're devaluing the title. You got a lot of divided opinion on Jay White. And, you know, I've seen a few great Evil matches. Evil's very good. But I don't see him as being an elite-level guy. I mean, I was very surprised. Even with the heel turn the night before, I mean, it kind of made sense that you keep the momentum going. But I was shocked. You know, when I saw that outcome, I was shocked. I think it does bring the title down a little bit in my eyes. But look, I look at wrestling right now, and look, it's all a work and everything, and the belts are what they are. We know what pro wrestling is, but if you say to me, what championship in what promotion? What is the championship or the world championship in wrestling that you view as being the most sought after or the most prestigious, or the company just does a really good job of making that title feel special. Hands down, it's the IWGP title. You know, relatively speaking, very few people have held the IWGP title. Now, look, very few people have held the AEW title, but AEW has been around for, you know, I mean, like a year. So that's a little skewed. But the IWGP title is, to me, the most prestigious championship in all of wrestling. And so when it starts bouncing around in the hands of guys that you would not expect to have it, I do think it kind of brings it down a little bit. But look, Evil could go out there and they can give him a run and he can impress a lot of people and prove a lot of people wrong. He can prove me wrong. That's just how I feel. I sound like Nico and Vince now. But seriously, I mean, that's just how I feel. I want to know where Sonata was in all this. He was nowhere to be found. Next weekend on Ring of Honor TV, the company will be airing a special tribute episode celebrating the career of Hana Kimura. Hana's mother, Kyoko, worked together with ROH in putting the episode together. Just looking back at the ROH match that she had with Sumi Sakai in the Women of Honor title tournament back in 2018, and the six-woman tag team match that Hana was involved in at the G1 Supercard last year at Madison Square Garden. And lots of tributes and memories from members of the Ring of Honor roster, so that's very cool of them to be doing that. You can check out ROHWrestling.com to see when and if the show airs in your area, or I believe they also air them, although it may be on a delay, after it airs on the Ring of Honor website, I believe. So that's, in case you want to check that out, that is next weekend. You know, theme parks in Japan have banned screaming on roller coasters because it spreads coronavirus. And their advice to the riders is very simple. Their advice to any people riding a roller coaster right now in Japan is please scream inside your heart. That is their advice. Funny thing is, I do that every Monday night. And sometimes on Fridays. Which brings me to Raw. Actually, there was more to like from Raw this week than there was from SmackDown. I definitely screamed on the inside watching that show on Friday. I screamed on the outside, too. That show was so offensive to me. Monday Night Raw saw the return and the final appearance of the fired Heath Slater. So you can go cue up the Grandpa Simpson theme. He was in, he was out. Dolph Ziggler brought back Heath to confront his former 3MB partner as Ziggler tries to antagonize Drew McIntyre heading into their championship match at Extreme Rules. But Slater almost didn't show up at all. It took some convincing. This is according to Drew McIntyre in an interview that he gave to TalkSport. He called Heath on the phone and he had to convince him to come to the Performance Center and do the segment. Heath did not want to do it, or he was on the fence about doing it, and Drew pushed him to do it and convinced him it would be a good idea. Here's what we're going to do. And so he ended up showing up. And he showed up looking more jacked than he looked in the 10 years that he spent on television. He looked to be in great shape, getting ready for that Impact run. And then he cut the best, most heartfelt promo I've ever heard Heath Slater cut in my life. Talked about watching Drew McIntyre win the WWE Championship this year at WrestleMania and crying with his kids because he was so happy. You know, when Drew was fired many years earlier by WWE, Heath said that he called him every day because they were brothers. And then he goes, I got fired and you weren't there for me. He goes, where were you? Where were you for me? He goes, when was the last time that we spoke? And Drew couldn't remember. He said, exactly. It's been that long. Because Drew knows, you know my kids. He goes, not the six or seven kids that I pretended to have on TV. He goes, the two beautiful girls that I fight for every day. He goes, the whole I got kids thing, I need this job. He goes, that's real. He said, that's real life. That's not a gimmick. It's not an act. That's the real deal. And he said that he wants Drew to give him what he deserves. He shoved Drew, then he slapped him across the face, and finally McIntyre very reluctantly agreed to give him a match. So then they proceed. Now, I'm buying into this. I'm like, man, this is really good stuff. And you can see the passion and the emotion in Heat's eyes. You know, and it was kind of similar to the Drake Maverick thing, but unlike the Drake Maverick thing, which was very real, despite what people may think, just trust me on that, it was very real until they finally did give him a contract. But they dragged that thing out for weeks. This guy was fired. And I know he wanted to be there, I guess. He wanted to finish out his matches in the tournament, but that dragged out for weeks. This was a one-off. Drew convinced him to show up, and he showed up, and he brought it. He brought it. One time, one segment. Not dragging this out for weeks, you know, holding this guy by a string, thinking that he's going to get his job back or something. He knew what this was. He showed up, he delivered, and he went home. But they come out of this great promo and this great segment with the two of them, and they proceed to have a 20-second match where he took his shirt off and McIntyre gave him a claymore and pinned him, and that was it. And I'm not saying that the two of them should have had a competitive back-and-forth half-an-hour match with a guy who, A, is fired and is probably going to show up on another promotion's pay-per-view in a week, and B, a guy who, even when he was employed, was never, ever even thought to be in contention for the WWE title and should not have been wrestling for the WWE title. But you do that angle, and then you follow it up with a 20-second nothing match. If I can't even call it a match. It was a kick. What a waste. After the match, Ziggler yelled at Slater. He attacked him. Drew ran down to make the save, and the two of them, of course, made up, and they hugged, and that was their big swan song together. The only one missing was Jinder. And that's because Jinder got hurt again, had knee surgery, so he's out. Otherwise, you would have had the whole 3MB. I'm sure that's what they would have wanted to do. Probably the whole 3MB reunion one last time. God knows they ran that Shield reunion into the ground before Ambrose left the company. So, I gotta tell you though, I watched that promo, and when that promo was over, I had more interest in seeing Drew McIntyre defend the WWE title against Heath Slater than I have interest in seeing Dolph Ziggler challenge for the championship. So I think it kind of worked against. As good as it may, like, as a television moment, as good as it may have been, I think it actually worked against what they were trying to accomplish. Because Drew and Dolph is not the match I have any interest in seeing coming out of this show. Kairi Sane is back for now. She came back. She took on Sasha Banks. A competitive Kairi Sane match instead of an out-and-out squash. I was shocked. When was the last time we saw one of those? Bayley interfered for the DQ, and this now leads to a women's tag team title match tomorrow night on Raw. It will be Sasha and Bayley defending against the Kabuki Warriors on the Go Home Raw to the pay-per-view. Kevin Owens and Rey Mysterio beat Seth Rollins and Murphy, which allowed Rey to choose the stipulation for the match with Rollins at Extreme Rules, the eye for an eye match that I mentioned earlier, where one man has to pull the other man's eye out in order to win. What happened to the whole we don't do blood and guts thing? What about that? I saw some people on my replies bring that up, and I said, you know what? They're absolutely right. I thought Vince McMahon was real down on blood and guts and stuff. Then again, he was real down on the idea of TNT liking blood and guts. I guess the excuse here would be, well, you know, we're basically on pay-per-view. We're on our own network, so we can do whatever we want here on our own network, which is not true. They could do whatever they want on their own network, as desperate as they are to probably bring viewers back, they'd be doing TV-14, which probably would be worse. Just because it's TV-14 or TVMA doesn't mean that it's going to be a better television show. But yeah, we're getting some blood and guts here, I guess. You got to pull the other guy's eye out. That sounds like blood and guts to me. They have jumped the shark with this cinematic shit. They have jumped the shark. So here's what I want to know. Does this mean that they're not doing a tag team match with Rey and Dominic against Rollins and Murphy? I thought that was the end goal here. Because I thought that was the whole point. Unless the loser is going to have to wrestle in that match with an eye patch. I mean, I would think if a guy's eye got pulled out, he wouldn't be medically cleared. But then again, this is WWE. These people have mutant healing powers. Or the loser will have to wrestle with an eye patch for a while. It is such a dumb stipulation. It is such a dumb stipulation that I don't know what else to say. I've made my thoughts clear on what I think about this. And I say that as a horror fan. I see horror movies all the time where people's eyes are being pulled out, brains are being pulled out. Just because I'm a horror fan doesn't mean that I think that it's appropriate to start doing wrestling matches like they're horror shows. And again, I watch a horror show every Monday night, so why should this be any different? MVP, he unveiled a new United States Championship belt, even though he is not the United States Champion. I don't know if the idea is that he is supposed to be, you know, he had his own belt made, and he's walking around with it as the fake champion, or what. But I assume that's going to be the new championship they use going forward, and not just for this angle. When I first laid eyes on the new belt on TV, I thought it looked like shit. I looked at that belt, I said, that's the ugliest fucking thing I've ever seen outside of the 24/7 monstrosity. I think that belt comes across on television terribly. And I don't know if it's the lighting or if it was just the positioning of it or what it was. And then I took a look at photos of it, of posed shots, of better quality shots, more up-close shots of the belt online, still photos. And I actually think it looks nice. I don't think that belt is done justice by how it looks on TV. I'm not a huge fan of the shape, but you throw an eagle on there and it's going to be hard for me to hate on that. It's definitely an improvement from the old design. Not as good as the WCW belt from the 90s, but few things can be as good as those old school championship belts. So yeah, I don't know what it is. Maybe it was the lighting. I just took the first time when he pulled that sheet off and I looked at that belt and they zoomed in on it on TV, I thought, ew, that's ugly as shit. But then I look at it in photos and actually it looks nice. Reminds me of that Seinfeld episode where he's dating that woman and he's dating this woman and he thinks that she's attractive and very sexy. And then he sees her in the light and he's like, ah, it's like Jekyll and Hyde. That's how I feel about the U.S. title. See, I feel like every situation in life you could associate or somehow associate with a Seinfeld episode or a scene or a quote or a storyline. That's why it's one of the greatest shows ever made. But Belt Dan Fan on Twitter, who has made championship belt for WWE in the past, and he has been in the know on a lot of these things in the past, he posted back in December, 7 months ago, or 8 months, I guess, 8 months ago, that the U.S. belt, the new U.S. belt, was done. You know, there are times the WWE will commission a new belt, and then they'll get it, and they'll just sit on it for months until they, I guess, until the right moment when they're ready to debut it. Sometimes they never even use them. They'll have new belts made that they pay a few $1,000s for, and they don't even use them. They probably put them in the warehouse. I would love to see all of the championship belts in that warehouse. We know that they've made belts that they've never really used on TV before. The Rock had the Brahma Bull belt, like Stone Cold had the Smoking Skull. I don't believe the Brahma Bull belt ever saw the light of day on TV. Mabel? There was a King of the Ring belt made for Mabel. Never saw it on TV. I've seen a picture of it, but I've never seen it on... It was never used on TV. You know, Andre. Heading into WrestleMania 3 back in 87, they had a belt made, which I do believe was shown on TV. I believe it was. But obviously it was never used because Andre didn't win the belt at WrestleMania 3. But they had an extended version, a longer, bigger version of the Hogan 86-87 belt, made to fit Andre the Giant as like his own custom championship to fit a giant. And obviously that never got used either. I would love to take a trip to that warehouse one day and see all of the different championships that are in there, including the ones that we've probably never even seen before. But Dan says that they had new SmackDown tag team titles made. They've had those belts since WrestleMania 35. And they're still sitting on them. We have no idea if those new belts will ever debut. That's WrestleMania last year they had those belts, and they still haven't used them. He also said that there's a new NXT title that has been made. It is being replaced. The current belt is being replaced by a larger version of the same design, which makes sense. You know, you've got Keith Lee is a much bigger man than Adam Cole is. And so is Karrion Kross. I'm just saying, whether it's Keith Lee or Karrion Kross, if he beats Keith Lee, you got two big guys. Makes sense to have a bigger belt. So we had another week, another loss for Ruby Riott. What does that make it now? What is she now? 0-12, I believe, since making her grand return to television. She lost last week to Peyton Royce of the Iconics, who looked impressive. This week, it was Billy Kay, who did not look as impressive as Peyton Royce. She won off of a distraction, the dreaded, God, these baby faces are such fucking idiots. Oh my God. They're so easily, they're like cats. These people, these baby faces in WWE are like cats. If you shine a flashlight on the floor, I feel like they'll be distracted and they'll chase after it. You throw a piece of yarn, dangle it in the air. They're so easily distracted. So she got distracted by Peyton Royce. Billy Kay hit some kind of slam or spine buster of some kind. I don't even know what you call it. Like a sit-out slam. And there it is. Billy Kay gets the win. If Liv Morgan comes back, because again, I have to assume, and I always make that mistake when it comes to WWE. I do that too much. I assume common sense when in reality there is no common sense to be had 98% of the time. But I assume, whatever reason Liv Morgan is out, I don't know if it has to do with COVID or not, but they're just waiting for her to come back. And when she is back on TV, it could be this week, could be next week, they'll do some kind of reunion with her and Ruby Riott. Maybe they'll even form a tag team. Maybe they'll be women's tag team champions in the next couple of months. Maybe that's what this is all leading to. I have to believe that. I have to assume. I have to believe. But if Liv Morgan comes back and they don't link the two of them back up together, then Ruby Riott needs to beat the fuck out of somebody in the back and quit. Now, that might not be the best career move for her, but boy, it'll feel good. In the battle of the Raw and SmackDown Women's Champions, Asuka picked up the win over Bayley. Kairi Sane took out Sasha Banks outside the ring, so she could not interfere. Asuka pinned Bayley after Bayley tried to counter out of the Asuka lock. They went 23 minutes. Probably did not need to go that long, but I still thought it was a good match. I am one of the people who has been really enjoying, for the most part, the Sasha and Bayley stuff on TV. Their segments. The most, I've enjoyed them the most the last several weeks on both of these shows, and even the stuff they did in NXT. I mean, some things not even they can save, but I think that they have been very entertaining. They've been some of the MVPs so far of these pandemic shows. You know, it's to the point where I don't even want them to break up yet. I was thinking, okay, all roads lead to SummerSlam, but you know what? If they could find a way to drag it out a little bit more, I would not be opposed to that, because I'm enjoying this. I'm enjoying what they're doing together. But yes, I believe entertainment-wise, Sasha and Bayley have been the stars of these pandemic shows. Which brings us to that abomination from Friday night. You know, some weeks you have good shows. Some weeks you have bad shows. Not every show can be a home run, especially in this environment. I get it. It's not the easiest way to book television. But you accept that some weeks will be good and some weeks will be not so good. And then you have whatever the fuck this show was on Friday night. Probably the worst WWE show that this company has put on all year long. And I don't want to hear, oh, you know, they were shorthanded because of the virus. That's their own fault. That is a mess of their own making. I don't have any sympathy. I don't grade them on a curve. The show was garbage. 30 minutes right out of the gate. 30 minutes of our lives wasted to open the show with Jeff Hardy on Miz TV. Once again, talking about being an alcoholic. Followed up with a very dull, very pedestrian, very boring match with Hardy and The Miz going through the motions. 30 minutes that we can never get back. When I'm laying there on my deathbed, in my old age, hopefully, with tubes sticking out of my nose and tubes sticking out of my arms, I'm going to be thinking, if only I hadn't wasted those 30 minutes watching Jeff Hardy and the fucking Miz, I could have had 30 more minutes to do something with my life. Hardy and Sheamus are going to have a bar fight at Extreme Rules. Remember the last bar fight that we had on pay-per-view with the APA at Vengeance in 2003? The APA Invitational. They even had the Easter Bunny. They beat the shit out of the Easter Bunny. If they bring the Easter Bunny back, that might be the only saving grace of this entire thing. This storyline sucks, and it needs to end, and it doesn't need to end at SummerSlam. It needs to end next Sunday. And I think we all know where it's leading. Jeff Hardy is going to be the conquering hero in the end, right? He overcomes obstacles. He overcomes his demons. He puts Sheamus, the evil heel, in his place. We all know where it's going. Jeff's going to pour liquor down Sheamus' throat. He's going to force him to drink whatever it is that he forces him to drink. And then the Vince McMahon specialty. I'll be shocked if it doesn't go down this way. The Vince McMahon specialty, Sheamus vomits all over the place. Because if there's one thing Vince McMahon loves just as much or more than poop, it's vomit. It's a perfect metaphor for this entire angle. Sasha and Bayley, one of the only saving graces on either show this week, beat Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross when Bayley used the ropes to pin Nikki. They replayed the match for Money in the Bank between Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt. So that was nice. 15 minutes I was able to avoid. And then came karaoke with Jey Uso hosting a contest with Lacey Evans, Dana Brooke, Tamina, and Naomi. Singing old WWE theme songs like With My Baby Tonight, the Honky Tonk Man's theme, and the Dusty Rhodes, you know, American Dream theme song. Honky Tonk Man was rolling in his grave watching this, and he's not even dead. Whoever thought this segment would be a good idea should be demoted. Demoted to janitorial duties at the Performance Center. They should be forced to clean the toilets with a fucking toothbrush. Naomi won, which is a conflict of interest anyway, because her brother-in-law was the host of the segment. Just pointing that out. Not that any of this matters. Then Lacey attacked her. I thought Lacey was a babyface now. Here she attacked Naomi like she's a heel. They had a match. Lacey wore a dress the entire time. Her dress was so puffed out, I'm surprised it didn't take up the entire length of the ring. She looked like she could barely move in that thing. This entire thing was a pile of shit. So much so that even the people in the segment could not bring themselves to defend it. The woman who won the karaoke contest on her Instagram in response to a fan who said, I would rather have seen you wrestle. That's what this person told Naomi. Naomi's response was, I would too. A lot of times we have to make chicken salad out of chicken shit. And she used the poop emoji. And she ended with, I'm so sorry. Your own talent has been reduced to apologizing. Apologizing to fans for awful creative. It's one thing when people like me come on here on our shows and talk about this stuff. I mean, I don't apologize. I call them out on it. When you have talent going on their social media and apologizing to fans for awful creative, you know you've got a problem. This entire show was a pile of shit. I'm not even getting into the main event. You know, after a few weeks where we had AJ Styles against Daniel Bryan and we had Matt Riddle debuting and facing AJ Styles, they follow up with a show like this? To promote a pay-per-view they think people are going to pay for because of a show like this? Or subscribe for or whatever? I mean, this is the problem, I guess, with the network era. They give everything away for $10, so they can, you know, they don't have to worry anymore about, well, we got to convince people to pay $50 for the pay-per-view. No, you don't. You got a network for $10 that you've been giving away for free now for the last 5 years. So they don't have to worry about anything. $1 billion. Fox paid $1 billion for this. I want you to watch this. Actually, I don't want you to watch this show, but if you did, watch that show on Friday. Fox paid $1 billion just to win the demo. I hope it was worth it. I hope it was worth it. And this week's show was up. It was up, not a lot, but it was up from last week's show. I don't even know what to say. This show should be boiled in acid and poured down Vince McMahon's crotch. So let's talk about these ratings, because people have lost their minds over these ratings on Wednesday nights. So let's break this down and put this to bed once and for all as far as where things stand, because all I see is a lot of sniping and shouting back and forth by people on both sides who, in a lot of cases, don't really know what the hell they're talking about. For Fyter Fest and the Great American Bash, the story this week was the same as it was for week one. The only difference being both shows were down from the week before, which is not a good thing. In terms of total overnight viewers, for the third week in a row, the first time that has happened since Dynamite debuted in October, NXT bested AEW in total viewers for the night, 759,000 to AEW's 715,000. But also, like the week before, AEW won the 18 to 49 demo and was ranked 7th for the night on cable in that category as compared to NXT, which ranked 24th for the night. In fact, AEW won every single quarter hour of the night against NXT in 18 to 49, including the Big Keith Lee versus Adam Cole match, which was very surprising to me. I mean, I know that one in total viewers, but in terms of the 18 to 49 that everybody loves to talk about, even that, AEW won against the biggest match NXT could have put out. Tony Khan tweeted, he says, if anybody thinks that I consider being a top 7 show on cable anything but a huge win, they are incorrect. A win in the demo is a win in the business, and this is a business. I know the industry was not talking about the demo as much 20 years ago, but it's what drives our revenue today. He then proceeded to post a whole series of tweets, instead of leaving well enough alone, including a photo of the ratings chart. And he ended with this. He goes, my favorite thing about some of the frequent repliers to my tweets is how the 18 to 49 demographic is these people's best friend on Mondays and Fridays. And then they act like they never even heard of it on Wednesdays. First of all, I don't know what the hell he's talking about, because I don't know what he's looking at or where he's lurking. I know he used to be, you know, a big fan and would read the newsletters and everything, so maybe he's, you know, perusing some of the wrestling message boards, which I would hope he's not doing. I would hope he has better things to do than that. I don't hear anybody talking about demos for Raw on Monday nights. I just hear people rightfully talking about how the audience is going down, down, down. So that's number one. I don't know what the hell he's talking about. Number two, for Tony Khan to be wasting his time posting ratings charts in response to a bunch of trolls just trying to get a rise out of him. There is nothing wrong with being proud of your success. He should be proud. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But he does not need to be tweeting out stuff like that. What the hell is he doing? And then you have Chris Jericho. It's even worse. Why the hell is Chris Jericho vanity searching his name for tweets about ratings and then replying to people about it? Some random fan on Twitter did not even tag him. He didn't tag at I am Jericho. He just posted a tweet about Adam Cole and Keith Lee, you know, destroying Jericho and Orange Cassidy in total audience. Didn't tag anybody. And Jericho ended up quote tweeting this guy to correct him because some of the numbers were wrong. I mean, but that's beside the point. How did he find this guy? If he didn't vanity search him, how did he even find this guy? He wasn't tagged. So Jericho quote tweets the guy and corrects him. What the hell is Chris Jericho searching these people out and replying to them for? It is embarrassing. He does not need to be doing that. It is beneath him. Now, from the sounds of it, TNT is very happy with how Dynamite has been doing. And because there has been so much debate about demos of late, let's just clear this up, okay? I actually thought that Mike Johnson had a great take on this on PW Insider. Talked a little bit about this. Yeah, he says that Warner Media is so happy with AEW's performance of late. There has been a lot of talk in recent weeks about coming up with additional ways to link AEW, you know, link them in some way with other Warner shows, other Warner properties, brands, what have you. I have not heard any kind of update on the second AEW show that was supposed to be part of this new contract. I assume the pandemic put that on ice because, I mean, is now really the time to be doing a second show? Probably not. But I've heard nothing new. They're supposed to have a second show, not Dark, something totally new. And there's been no talk or no movement on that at all, but I guess it's in the contract. So maybe they're just waiting and, you know, it's like a 3 or 4 year contract that they have. So at some point that second show will come. But they're very happy by all accounts with AEW to the point that they are talking about, again, synergy of some kind with other Warner brands and Warner properties. If you are an AEW fan, if you are a wrestling fan, that is great news. You want to hear stuff like that. Because that TV deal is the lifeblood of that company. So I get it when Tony Khan is talking about this is a business. It's the 18 to 49 that keeps us going. That contract with TNT, with Warner, that is what is keeping this company afloat. At a time when they are not making money off live ticket sales, live merch sales, because they're not running any events with fans. All they have is the money from the TV contract. That's it. You take that away, there is no more AEW. So if Warner is happy, then that's great news for them. The demos are important. Not saying they're not. I because I've had people say to me, well, how come you always talk about the total audience? The demos are really important, aren't they? Yes, they are. The demos are very important. The 18 to 49 demo. Not just with wrestling, but TV in general. As a fan, maybe I don't give a shit, but if you're an advertiser, if you're paying for airtime on that show or on that network, that's what they look at. I like citing the total audience when I give ratings updates because I like mentioning who had the most eyeballs on the night. Despite what people may say, I still believe that that's an important number. It's an important gauge of a television show's popularity. So I like putting that number out there. And that does not include, by the way, any of the DVR numbers for Dynamite or any of the DVR numbers for NXT. My understanding is that the DVR numbers have typically favored AEW by a fairly large margin over NXT. So even when NXT, those rare occasions when NXT would win the overnight number, in the end, AEW would end up with more viewers. Nobody really talked about that. But that's been the case for a while now. You know, per The Observer, that gap in recent weeks has narrowed a lot. So NXT, if they haven't closed the gap, they've gotten a lot closer when it comes to the DVR numbers. We also don't have any way of knowing exactly how many more viewers NXT gets from the WWE Network. I don't imagine that it's hundreds of thousands more, but could it be 50,000, 150,000? We don't know because they don't publicly release those numbers. When that NXT replay hits the network on Thursday night, we don't know. But people wait for these overnight numbers on Thursdays because that's what everybody is conditioned to do. That's what everybody does for Raw and SmackDown every week, and that's what everybody used to do with Raw and Nitro 20 years ago, 25 years ago. We are creatures of habit. The reason Monday Night Raw will not be canceled, as I've been asked about before, oh, you know, the numbers are going down. Is Monday Night Raw going to be canceled? You know, is that even though their total audience continues to decline, which it does, even though that continues to happen, their demo numbers are still good. So you can't say the demos don't matter because Monday Night Raw is a great example of why they do. Because the numbers overall are going down, down, down. But the demos are allowing USA to stay competitive in the top 10, top 5, top 3 on cable every single week, which is all they care about. Now even those demos are starting to slip up a little bit. That's got to be a big concern to WWE. But they will usually come in at number 1 or number 2 on the night. On Mondays and Fridays, not always. That doesn't mean they're declining. Total audience is not something to be alarmed about. It absolutely is, and it's a problem that they have failed to address for a number of years now. Nostalgia will not work. Brought back Christian recently. Ric Flair's back on TV. The Big Show. It's not doing them a lot of good. Everything is about the younger audience when it comes to TV, unless you're CBS, I guess, the old people's network. But that's the data that the networks deliver to the advertisers, and the advertisers are the ones who pay the bills. So when Chris Jericho or Tony Khan talk about the demos, they're not wrong. And they have consistently beaten NXT in all but the 50 and over demo pretty much since Dynamite debuted almost a year ago in October. There have been a few times where they have won the older demo too, but NXT usually has that on lockdown. Older people really like NXT for some reason. I haven't quite figured out what it is. You know, I don't really understand why. But yeah, boy, the 50 and over, they sure do love their NXT. But I still like looking at the overnight number, and part of that is just habit. But I don't think it should be ignored either. You know, NXT has now done something that it has never done before. It has won the overnight audience against AEW for 3 straight weeks. So it's something that they can be proud of. But by no means does that spell doom and gloom for AEW. No matter how hard the AEW haters want to will that into existence, it's the beginning of the end. For whom the bell tolls, the end is nigh. For AEW, all these fools and their dumb comments and their dumb memes, no matter how much they try to will that into existence and make that a reality, it is not doom and gloom for AEW. In fact, TNT is thrilled with those numbers. And that is good news, because competition is the reason why we ended up with the Great American Bash as counter-programming. You know, Triple H did an interview with Sports Illustrated, and he said that they don't counter-book. But he never said they don't counter-program. Counter-programming and counter-booking are two different things. And that's exactly what they did. They counter-programmed. Which is fine. I would have done the same thing. Nothing wrong with that. And it's why we just had a winner-take-all title-for-title match on NXT television and not on an NXT TakeOver special. Because if you think, were it not for this little competition, we'd be getting Adam Cole against Keith Lee, champion versus champion, on anything other than TakeOver, you're out of your mind. That's the biggest match they've ever done. That's the biggest match they've ever given away, I should say, on NXT television. As a fan, I like competition. We need more of it. We need more competition, not less. We need more. Which, again, is why all of the folks who continue to wish ill or wish death upon AEW, you are not fans, you are fools. You are a fool. When you look in the mirror, when you wake up in the morning and you go to bed at night, you look at yourself in the mirror, you know what you see? Stamped across your forehead, fool. You should get it tattooed there. We need both shows to do well. I do wish those numbers were higher for both shows, because I thought they were both very good. We actually had a first this week. For the first time since I have been posting the Twitter polls for both shows, Dynamite and NXT tied. They didn't just tie. They were dead heat right down to the decimal point, because now the Twitter polls allow for decimal points, which, you know, previously they didn't. You know, I said, what did you think of the Great American Bash? Night 2. With 1,928 votes in, 77.8% thumbs up, 22.2% thumbs down. What did you think of Night 2 of AEW Fyter Fest? With 1,850 votes in, so less than 100 vote difference, but some votes short on the AEW side, but not by much. 1,850 votes in for Fyter Fest. 77.8% thumbs up, 22.2% thumbs down. That has never happened before in all the time I've been doing these polls for any show. Right down to the decimal point like that, that's insane. That's pretty crazy. But that tells you how evenly matched these shows were this week, and I think how much people overall liked them. So I wish the TV ratings were higher, but I want you to keep this in mind. And this is the point that I made at the very beginning of the show when I said that there's something that happened here that not a lot of people, if anybody else, has talked about. But it's a story. It's a story to watch. Both shows this week combined, and this is just the overnight audience. This is not the final number, but the overnight audience. They combined for almost 1.5 million viewers. Now, they've had weeks where they've done more than 1.5 million, but here's why this is interesting. They combined for almost 1.5 million, right? 1.5 million viewers. Monday Night Raw this past week averaged a little over 1.6 million viewers. That's the second lowest viewership in the history of that show. It is the closest that we have come to seeing Dynamite and NXT combine to almost not only match the Raw audience, but beat the Raw audience. That has never happened before. It's never even really been that close. And one of these weeks, it may well happen. It may well happen. That, to me, is less of a sign of how good the Wednesday night numbers are and more a sign of how far that Monday audience has fallen. You know, ratings do not always correlate to the quality of a show. Lots of quality TV shows over the years have been canceled prematurely because of low ratings. You know, one does not always equate to the other. But if there is any justice in this world, Dynamite and NXT will soon top Monday Night Raw. Not going to top SmackDown, most likely. SmackDown's on Fox. That audience, it's kind of baked in that it's always going to be at least a little bit higher than Raw, although it's getting kind of dangerously low. But if there's any justice in this world, before long, these two shows on Wednesdays will be able to combine to top Monday Night Raw because they have been more consistently entertaining than anything that I have seen on Monday nights and even on most Friday nights, especially this week. And I wish the numbers would bear that out. And if things keep going the way they're going, it may happen a lot sooner than most people think. This Wednesday, it is a special Fight for the Fallen episode of Dynamite raising money for COVID relief. Sonny Kiss answers Cody's open challenge for the TNT title. The biggest match of Sonny Kiss's life. There won't be any title change here, but here's his chance to really go out there and shine. FTR takes on the Lucha Bros. That should be excellent. Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks take on Jurassic Express. That also should be quite good. And Jon Moxley will defend the AEW World Championship against Brian Cage. But before Cage challenges for the AEW title on Wednesday, he will be defending his newly revived FTW title against Brian Pillman Jr. Tuesday on AEW Dark. Brian Pillman Jr. is still under contract to MLW, but he is allowed to take bookings like this. This is, I believe, his second time appearing on Dark. He lost last week in a match to Sean Spears. And so he'll be taking on Cage and maybe one of the biggest matches of his career. Taz brought the old ECW title back, the FTW belt that became a, you know, it's kind of like what the $1 million belt was to Ted DiBiase back in the day, or the smoking skull belt to Stone Cold. That's what the FTW belt was to Taz. And so he brought the belt back, and he crowned Brian Cage the new champion this past week on Dynamite. WWE never had ownership rights of that title. It has been in Taz's possession since 1999, so he's freely able to use it and do with it what he will. Nothing that WWE can do about it. Now, for as much talent as AEW has right now in the tag team ranks, AEW has a big women's problem. And you've heard me talk about this before, and the situation has not really changed. If anything, the pandemic has made it worse. They have a great champion right now in Hikaru Shida. But with Big Swole now being suspended in storyline for, you know, terrorizing Britt Baker. Although Britt Baker, you know, she's been doing the injury angle and she should be about ready to come back any week now. You know, she was set to be out for 6 weeks. I think it's been right around that time. So would not be at all shocking to see her be back in the ring very, very soon. But Chris Statlander is out injured. That's a real injury. Not that the Britt Baker injury isn't real, but it's a real serious injury that's going to keep Statlander out for many months. It was an ACL injury. So we're not going to see Statlander for a while. She's on the shelf. There's other talent stuck outside of the country. They cannot travel in. They cannot travel back and forth. I assume that's why we haven't seen Riho. You know, or after returning a few weeks ago, they kind of made a little bit of a big deal about Anna Jay being back on Dynamite. I was very excited to see Anna Jay back on TV, and she hasn't been seen since. And then you have Abaddon. After making her big Dynamite debut and beating Anna Jay, which was kind of a shock because Anna Jay was the one being promoted, Abaddon goes in there in 2 minutes and beats her, and she looks like something out of The Walking Dead with all that makeup and stuff. And we don't see her. We haven't seen her since. We haven't seen either woman on Dynamite since then. So that does not leave very many options for Shida, which prompted Tony Khan to go and tweet. Boy, he loves tweeting. He went and he tweeted, Shida, we're searching for additional domestic challengers worthy of facing you to create more competition. See, there's a fine tweet from Tony Khan. Nothing wrong with that. Doesn't need to be posting charts and explaining himself to people. Here he's trying to just explain to Shida that we're out there, we're looking for more challengers to bring in, to give you competition and put you in the ring with them. And that's probably a shoot. That's not even a storyline thing. They're probably really out there saying, who the hell could we bring in here to challenge this woman? So what does that leave us with? That basically leaves Penelope Ford, who already lost to Shida, and Nyla Rose, who is bringing in a new manager. And that's it. That is it. Someone called into my Dynamite stream on Wednesday, and they asked if I thought that they needed to bring in new women. Is that what AEW needs to do? Just they have to go sign and bring in a whole bunch of new women. And I didn't really like that idea because I didn't think that it was really a lack of having enough women under contract. They actually have quite a few women, I believe, under contract. But they just don't have a lot of them available at the moment, either because of travel issues or because of injuries. I think a couple of new faces would not be a bad idea. But I think they just need to get back some of those people that they already have and then start to really just get something going in that division. Because right now, you know, AJ Styles probably thinks this division is flatter than the earth. And it is. This division is very flat. And having seen her make her return on the other channel on Wednesday night, Mercedes Martinez was a real miss for AEW. She could have been of some help to them right now, and they kind of let her slip away, and WWE snatched her up. Now, I mentioned Nyla Rose bringing in a new manager. She hasn't announced who it's going to be. My guess, I threw the name Vicky Guerrero out there. We've seen Vicky Guerrero hanging out in the crowd some weeks on AEW, so she's obviously, you know, she's more in the AEW camp right now than she is in WWE. According to Vicky, she's apparently persona non grata in WWE right now. So I think Vicky would be my guess, but I guess we'll find out. I don't know, you know, who else. She kind of mentioned in her promo, Nyla, that you see Arn Anderson helping Cody to win championships. Taz now helping Brian Cage to win championships. I need somebody to help me. You know, Vicky's been a manager before. So that would be my guess, but I suppose we'll have to see in the next week or two who that turns out to be. Now let's talk about the Great American Bash here. Night two, I thought it was a fun show. Bookended by the two best matches, the opening street fight with Mia Yim and Candice LeRae, the winner-take-all main event with Keith Lee winning the big one. They tried to do damage control by teasing that they taped multiple outcomes after the result got out, got leaked early, which I know Keith Lee was not very happy about. But I think most people saw through that. It didn't make the moment any less special or fun to see Keith Lee get his big moment I like seeing good things happen to good people. Here's a guy in Keith Lee who had his first WWE tryout in 2008. It's a long time ago. 2008 is when he had his first tryout. That was the same year Chris Jericho and Shawn Michaels were having that classic feud for the World Heavyweight title. And he was flat out told, "You suck," on promos. That's basically what they told him. "You are terrible. Your work is all right, but your promos are shit." Then he had another tryout a few years later in 2011. Marginally better, but still not good enough. They sent him away. And then a third tryout in 2013. That's three failed tryouts. And he was this close to just throwing his hands up in the air and giving up and quitting the wrestling business. He was about to get out and go do something else. Then he got some advice. He got some words of advice from William Regal and Dusty Rhodes that kept him going. It motivated him to just don't quit yet. Just keep going. You're going to make it. Just be patient and keep going. And he did. And now you look and see where he is now. After hanging with Roman Reigns at the Survivor Series, hanging with Brock Lesnar in the Royal Rumble match, and now a double champion in NXT. Mia Yim and Candice LeRae, they had basically an Extreme Rules match 10 days early. One of the high spots was the two of them brawling outside of the ring to an area by the exit. And there was a table set up with food. Food and plates and napkins and forks and spoons and all that stuff. Cleared it off. And right next to the table was a little stage. And they got up there. Mia threw a drop kick. Sent Candice flying backwards through the table. And the back of her head smacked the ground. That looked like it sucked. There were tons of chairs being thrown into the ring. And that would play into the finish. Mia pulled out a pair of brass knucks, which would make William Regal very proud. The power of the punch. Only it was Candice who ended up using them. She was able to swipe them off of Mia's hand when they were up on the top rope. They were actually up on a table in the corner. The table was being balanced by the top rope. It was very wobbly. I would not have felt very, very safe and stable on top of that table. But Candice grabbed the knucks right off her hand and walloped her with it and then hit a swinging neck breaker down to the pile of chairs below. And Candice LeRae gets the win. Candice needed this win more than Mia did. She really has not done a damn thing of note since she and Johnny Gargano turned heel. So I thought it was the right outcome, and I thought it was a good match. They had time to fill, so we got a Bronson Reed win over Tony Nese. You know, I look at Tony Nese, and I am immediately reminded of Jim Powers and Paul Roma. Am I the only guy who feels this way? This is exactly what comes into my brain when I look at this guy now. I think of Jim Powers and Paul Roma. I think of the Young Stallions. Two guys who also walked around with a $1 million physique, but were never utilized like it. And that was at a time when Powers was around and Roma was first around. And, you know, they weren't just doing the tag team thing together. Eventually, they were kind of just used as enhancement guys, basically. But, you know, late 80s, early 90s, they look great. Like, physically, they look great. But, and it was at a time when the body meant more than it probably does today. I was surprised that those guys did not do more. Especially Paul Roma. More so Roma than Powers. I was surprised they didn't do more with him. Even when he was with Hercules and they had a good thing going. They never gave that team a chance. Power and Glory, they never gave them a real chance. They never took them seriously. They never pushed them as any kind of serious threat. Nese is a great athlete. Cosmetically, he's got a great look, but the guy would have an easier time catching the 10 most wanted fugitives than he would catching a win on TV. That's just the sad reality for Tony Nese. Robert Stone, he tried to recruit Shotzi Blackheart, who is backstage playing in her toy tank, which looks ridiculous, by the way. I mean, I get that's her gimmick and all, but she looks absolutely ridiculous. She looks like a child. So she rejected him. He threw his cup of coffee over his shoulder. Didn't realize that Killian Dane just so happened to be standing. Now, why would Killian Dane be standing behind him? When was the last time we even saw Killian Dane on TV? Why is Killian Dane even there? Well, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And he had the coffee splash right on him, and he freaked out. He grabbed Robert Stone. He assaulted him. He put him down on the ground. And Shotzi drove her tank, her toy tank, over Stone's leg. And he sold this. I mean, Sid broke his leg in the ring. The bone was sticking out. And he didn't freak out the way that Robbie E freaked out here in this segment. So I guess he plays his role to a hilt. But all this, I don't know, all this comedy bullshit, it's not doing anything for me. Johnny Gargano against Isaiah Swerve Scott. That was another late addition to the show. Very good match. We don't get to see enough of Swerve on this show, in my opinion. Not enough Swerve, bro. Bro, we don't get enough Swerve on the show, bro. Not enough Swerve. Let me book this guy. If I would have booked this guy in TNA, bro, Dixie Carter, I would have given her a new star, bro. Sorry, I lap into Russo whenever I mention the word Swerve here on the show. But he's real good. Scott's real good. I mean, I knew that going back to his Killshot days in Lucha Underground. He's very good. He went for a double stomp off the top rope, down to the floor. Gargano avoided it. He posted Swerve. Then he spiked him with a Poison Rana on the floor. Hit the patented slingshot DDT into the ring, and he got the win. So, Mr. and Mrs. Gargano, both victorious here on night two of the Great American Bash. We had El Legado del Fantasma against Drake Maverick and Breezango. I kind of felt the same way about this match that I felt about the SCU against Dark Order match on Dynamite. Good match with good work, but I just wasn't into it. You know, it served its purpose. It gave Escobar's new group a win. Maverick got the hot tag near the end. He ran wild for a bit until Escobar crotched him on the top and then finished him off with the Phantom Driver for the win. So it served a purpose, but again, the whole Breezango thing, man, I wish we could get the old Tyler Breeze back. Not this Breezango shit. I am not a fan. Mercedes Martinez, she was back. Brand new entrance. She made short work of Santana Garrett. And beat her with a Fisherman Buster suplex. Santana Garrett's another one, kind of like Deonna Purrazzo when she was in NXT and WWE. Treated more like an enhancement talent than somebody who could actually be of some value to them. As more than just a warm body to put in there against somebody else to put somebody else over. I don't quite understand it. But Mercedes is a solid addition to that women's roster. And then we have the winner take all. For the NXT and NXT North American titles, Keith Lee and Adam Cole. Funniest thing I saw all week was the tail of the tape graphic that they put up before this match that had Adam Cole listed at 6 feet tall and 210 pounds. I had a great laugh when they put that up on the screen. Funnier than any Robert Stone segment I have ever seen. If Adam Cole is 6 feet tall, 210 pounds, I will eat this desk. I will take a chunk out of this desk right now. Fuck out of here with that. Early on, Cole sidestepped a running charge from Lee. Lee crashed into the plexiglass wall. He actually broke right through it. Didn't just crash into it. He broke right through it. There was a cool spot where Lee deadlifted Cole from the, I think it was the middle rope on the inside, deadlifted him up into a superplex. Hit a moonsault. Keith Lee hit a moonsault. Pulling out an old Vader trick for a big guy like that. Got a near fall. Cole escaped Keith Lee's BBC. And he hit a super kick. Lee hulked up. Cole hit him with another one. Lee hulked up. Cole took his legs out with super kicks. Cole hit the last shot. Keith Lee kicked out. So then he was measuring him for the last shot again. Keith Lee, I don't even know how to properly in words explain to you how much he wrecked Adam Cole with this lariat. He didn't just turn the guy inside out. Adam Cole took a bad landing right on his neck. I thought he broke his neck. He took a hell of a bump off of this lariat. But anyway, we get to Cole later in the match. Super kicks at Keith Lee. Lee kicks out again. Pulls down his knee pad, does Adam Cole, hits the last shot, climbs up to the middle rope. He's going to hit a Panama Sunrise. Now, he had already hit Lee with a Panama Sunrise earlier. Now, he's going to go for another one. He comes off the ropes. Lee catches him, turns it into a spirit bomb, and then hits the Big Bang Catastrophe for the win. The BBC wins another one for Keith Lee. And not only did it win the match for Keith Lee, the BBC won him two championships. He becomes the first man in NXT history to hold those two top titles at the same time. I thought it was a very good match. Lee got the confetti bath. I only wish he had a live crowd for this moment. I felt the same way about Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania. I wish he had that audience to feed off of. He deserved that. But there's a lot, you know, look, there's a lot of people missing out on special moments right now. There's a lot of people missing out on special moments this year, and it's going to be into next year as well. So Keith Lee is far from the only one. They cut away a couple of times here during his celebration at the end. They cut away up into the sky box or whatever. I say sky box. I mean, it's a small building, but yeah, you know, the kind of the catbird seat with Karrion Kross and Scarlett looking down at Keith Lee celebrating. Teasing that he's going to be Keith Lee's next challenger for the championship. You know, very, I would say, likely at the next TakeOver show on August 22nd. And, but boy, you know, I would hate to see Keith Lee serve as just a transitional champion to get the belt onto Killer Kross. But Kross is a money, I think there's money in Kross. Kross and Scarlett, that combo, I think there's money in them. And I wouldn't beat him yet. But if they go with that program next, I don't see how it doesn't end with Kross taking the title. You know, even if the first match has no winner, they come to a second match and then he wins the championship. You know, maybe the idea is that Keith Lee would be a Raw or SmackDown guy at that point. Maybe he'll be on his way to one of those two brands. So it doesn't matter. I don't know. I don't know what their line of thinking is on this, but I'll tell you who probably should not be Raw or SmackDown bound just yet. And that's Adam Cole and Undisputed Era. I've thought about this. I've gone back and forth. I've waffled on this a few times. But man, I do not like his chances right now if they shift him over. Especially after the Shayna Baszler stuff. I mean, that just left a really bad taste in my mouth, what they did to her. You know, maybe give him a babyface run first. That's one thing. We haven't seen Adam Cole as a babyface ever in NXT. From the day he made his debut at NXT, he and the Undisputed Era have been heels for the last few years. They could always go heel again if they get shifted. If they do get shifted, I don't want them to get shafted. That's my concern about moving them to Raw or moving them to SmackDown. But like even a quick program maybe, I was thinking about this. What would you guys think of a quick program? Let's say they are going to get shifted to another brand, but before that, what if they had a quick little babyface run or program. And it was the Undisputed Era against El Legado del Fantasma. I mean, Fantasma is the Cruiserweight champion right now, but boy, you want to give him and his group a rub and probably get a couple of good matches out of it. You know, maybe Undisputed Era comes out on TV this week. They're licking their wounds. Adam Cole's down in the dumps. He lost his championship. He gets interrupted. Who are these guys coming out to interrupt us? It's not hard to get to a point where UE would be positioned as the babyfaces, and it builds to a six-man match, and maybe it builds to a singles match. What a match that would be, huh? The old King Cuerno one-on-one against Adam Cole. Get a little short program out of it. I think that could be something to do. Helps get the new guy over on with Adam Cole on the way out. Little trios feud between the two factions. Next week, Damian Priest gets Cameron Grimes one more time, and Io Shirai defends her NXT Women's Championship against Tegan Nox. They had a cool build-up package to the match on TV this week. Very well done, and that looks to be the main event going head-to-head with Moxley and Brian Cage for the AEW title. Let's take some mailbag questions. You can always email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. When you write in, let's go to Cindy from the Philippines, fan of the podcast since 2016. I don't get too many emails from the Philippines, so that's pretty cool. Would you consider Jeff Hardy to be a WWE guy or a TNA guy? I've acknowledged that Kurt Angle is a TNA guy when you consider the things he did in TNA versus WWE, but what would you consider Jeff Hardy to be? Yeah, the Kurt Angle thing is tough because I think of Kurt Angle as a WWE guy. That's just how I think of him. But you're not wrong. If you think that Kurt Angle, if you think of him as a TNA guy, you're not wrong, because his run in TNA was longer than his original run in WWE. And it's hard to believe, but if you look at the number of years he spent there, it's true. So, but that's Kurt Angle. Jeff Hardy, I absolutely think of Jeff Hardy as a WWE guy. When I think of him, the only TNA stuff, unfortunately, that I think of is the heel turn, which I know not everybody was a fan of. And I think of Victory Road. It's one of those events, unfortunately, that's a black mark in his career that he's going to be remembered for, was that horrible match with Sting and him being in no condition to perform. And that I definitely think of that when I think of Jeff Hardy. But I don't think of TNA when I think of him. I think of WWE. That's the promotion I most closely associate him with. Kevin, in Albany, New York, I heard a clip this week from Vince McMahon's old interview with Stone Cold on the WWE Network, and the comment seems to show Vince gave up on creating stars for ending The Undertaker's WrestleMania streak. He makes the argument, if not Lesnar, then who? He says, we knew we didn't have anybody credible to beat Undertaker the following year or the year after that. So basically, he's saying that he couldn't build somebody up in 3 years' time who could be credible to beat The Undertaker for a predetermined sport that the man controls 100% of himself. I found this wild. What do you think? You know, if you listen to The Undertaker, who has been making the rounds a lot recently, right, to promote the Last Ride documentary. We got more Undertaker interviews and podcasts and stuff in the last 3 months than we got in 30 years. If you listen to The Undertaker, when he answers questions about the streak, how did you feel about that? Were you in favor of it? How did that come about? And just watch him and just listen to him speak about it. You don't need to really read too much between the lines to see that even he thought the streak should not have been broken. It was not his idea. He said to Vince, are you sure you want to do this? Like, he was not at all convinced that it was the right move to make. Now, maybe later, if you would have waited, maybe eventually Undertaker would have found somebody that he thought could really benefit from it, and he would have been okay with it. But he clearly did not think that it was the right time. It was not the move that he himself would have made. It is not a move that I would have ever made. We got a memorable moment out of it, for sure. It's the most shocking finish to a wrestling match that I've ever seen. But even in the interview with Austin, you know, Austin, to his credit, when he was interviewing Vince, and I guess that interview was what? What was that interview? 2014? I mean, that interview is a few years old at this point. To Austin's credit, he pushed back on Vince McMahon when Vince was giving his bullshit answers, and he pushed back a little bit. And he said, you know, he's like, dude, you expect me to believe that it was Taker's call? And then Vince fesses up. He goes, no. He goes, it was me. It was my call. It was my decision. So it was purely a Vince McMahon decision, by his own admission. Vince McMahon may have been the only person in that company. He may have been the only person in that company. Not in the fan base, because there were plenty of fans who thought that The Undertaker should have lost, like in his last match, or the streak should have been broken, somebody else should have gotten the rub. You know, maybe not Brock, but there were definitely fans who were in favor of seeing the streak end. But in that company, I've never heard anybody who has ever been asked about this actually say it was the right move, or defend Vince McMahon. Although if you ask Bruce Prichard, I'm sure he'd defend Vince McMahon. But anybody else, I've never heard anybody else really come across as being a fan of that decision. And his comment is ridiculous. They did run with Brock after that. They did make Brock this, you know, unstoppable monster, which on the one hand made him very unique and made him very special. On the other hand, he was put over so strong, he was put over so dominantly, that it killed much of the roster. Anybody who would have had any believability as a contender for that championship was basically killed, because nobody was believable in the ring with Brock Lesnar. He was so dominant that nobody really came across as being believable when they were in the ring with Brock Lesnar. You know, that one F5, all it took was one. finished off so many guys who just nobody felt credible after that. They ran out of people to put him in the ring with. So the idea that Vince McMahon looked at his roster and thought, you know, there isn't a single person on the horizon who I would trust in that spot. So let's just go with Brock. That was a product of him thinking that The Undertaker was retired. Vince McMahon believed that that was going to be it for The Undertaker. That's why he did what he did. The only problem is he forgot to tell The Undertaker that. Undertaker didn't think he was done. And he wasn't. As evidenced by the fact that it's been 6 years and he's still wrestling. That was WrestleMania 30. He just had, you know, a match with AJ Styles at WrestleMania 36. Which, who knew, turned out to be the best match on the entire show. But Vince McMahon thought that this might be the end, and he's an old school guy. You should put somebody over on the way out, so let's go with Brock. It was very short-sighted. Maybe somebody else could have been built up for that spot, maybe not. If Undertaker retired with the streak intact at WrestleMania, but then, let's say, lost and put somebody over in his final match at Survivor Series, the event where he debuted 30 years ago this year, in fact, to the day, you know, that could have worked. That could have worked too. Maintain the streak at WrestleMania, but he still does the job on the way out. But this idea that he looked ahead, Vince McMahon looked ahead 2 years, 3 years, and didn't see anybody legitimate who could believably be the one to end the streak, is a very strong indictment, I think, of his own talent roster, if that's the case, and his own ability to make new stars. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. There were a few comments that he made on that podcast that made me roll my eyes. Cesaro was another one. Don't even get me started on that. Or the stuff about people walking around. Stone Cold's like, you know, I'm in the back and I see guys who are like walking around on eggshells and they're fearful for their jobs. They don't want to say the wrong thing. What do you have to say about that? You know, I was happy to hear him bring that up to Vince McMahon. And do you remember Vince McMahon's fantastic response to that? Well, then don't piss anybody off, pal. I believe that was his sage advice to the roster. Well, then don't piss anybody off. What a great work environment that sounds like. Yeah, I wonder, if you did not grow up as a WWE fan, if you were totally new to the idea about what WWE even was, you know, they had Tainara Conchi, who was released. She used to be with NXT. And she was cut in the last few months. And by the way, she might be a good pickup for AEW if AEW wanted to take a look at her. But she gave that interview with some, I forgot the YouTube channel. And she talked about how somebody in WWE, I think it might have been Johnny Ace, I don't remember exactly who, but they saw her modeling photos. And they reached out to her about coming to train and work in WWE. She didn't even know what WWE was. She thought it stood for something that had to do with prostitution. So, like, imagine if you are somebody like her who had no concept of what WWE even was. You weren't a fan growing up. You don't even know what they do. You don't know what it stands for. Who in their right mind would want to work for this company? When you hear these stories about the work environment there and just some of the bullshit, my God. I mean, I guess every company, I shouldn't say every company, but like a lot of companies have, you know, people that you don't like or, you know, a boss who's an asshole. You're afraid to say the wrong thing around them and people walk around fearing for their positions and people play politics. I mean, you can get that in any work environment, any big company. It's not exclusive to WWE. But the stories that have come out, you know, sometimes about this company, like if you're a talent and what it's like to work there, the pros and cons and stuff, like I hear these stories sometimes and then I see how they're classified and treated. And I'm like, who would want to work for this company unless you are just somebody who ever since you were a little boy or a little girl, it was your dream to one day work in WWE and it was your dream to be in the main event of WrestleMania. Then I can understand it because you're blinded by it. I feel like they prey on people like that. They could take advantage of people like that, and they know they can get away with it because it's their dream. Where else are you going to go, right? But like, if you're anybody else, why the hell would you want to work there? Oh my God! Like, because again, I get it. Like, people grow up, they're little Hulkamaniacs, they're little macho maniacs. You're fans of Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Stone Cold, and The Rock, right? You grew up during the Attitude Era or something, and those guys just felt like rock stars. Who doesn't want to grow up to tour the world and be a rock star, right? Who wants to sit behind a desk 9 to 5 when you could just go on the road and be a rock star and be on TV if you make it? Very few people really truly make it in the wrestling business. But if you are one of the lucky ones, right? Who wouldn't want that? I get that. But I do feel the company preys on people who kind of grew up on wanting to work there as like a dream of theirs. I'm sure they get away with a lot of shit that they would not be able to get away with somebody who is just working there because it's another job. Or, okay, yeah, this sounds cool. WWE wants to recruit me, some kind of like athlete from another sport. Then they find out how things really work there. It's like, yeah, peace out. you people are nuts. You people are out of their minds. Now, working in management, I can understand. Working in management, I get. Some of the top executives there are millionaires. I mean, look at this lady they just hired in the last week or so as their new CFO. She used to work for that company, Etsy. $700,000 base salary, $500,000 in WWE stock, 401k, I think a month of vacation that you're allowed each year, which sounds low, actually. I that's a big problem in this country. I like the way they do it in France. Like, it's mandated, like a certain, it's like a lot of weeks, too, out of the year that you have to take vacation. It's just good for your health. You should get at least 3 months of vacation. You can't take them all at once, but you spread those weeks out. That's what it should be. But anyway, you know, not a bad package, right? If you're taking that position. I think that woman is the real WWE superstar. She's the real superstar. Sign me up for that. I'll take that. Roy from Bowling Green, Kentucky. How would you have booked Diamond Dallas Page's WWE run? What could creative have done to make his run more meaningful? Do you think they dropped the ball on making DDP a player in WWE? Come on, Roy. Of course they did. Absolutely they dropped the ball with DDP. DDP was, I would say that DDP in WCW probably peaked, or the peak of his popularity probably was end of 98 into 90, maybe even the first half of 99. The stuff he was doing towards the end, the Jersey Triad stuff and all that, I mean, the hell with that. That, to me, is the DDP that I remember, 97, 98. You know, they tried to give him the rub even, you know, when they did the stuff with Malone and Dennis Rodman. DDP was in there as the partner, I think, even the Jay Leno stuff. And then the Halloween Havoc match with Goldberg, one of the best matches of Goldberg's career, where I think they absolutely could have done the title switch there if they were going to, you know, beat the streak, beat the undefeated streak. I would have rather have seen them do that than have him lose the way he did to Kevin Nash. But DDP was one of the few kind of homemade WCW stars. I'm not saying that he was at the same level as like Sting. Right? Because Sting had a lot of seniority. He was there for so many years. Sting, in a lot of ways, he was the icon. He was the franchise of WCW. But when I look at like the homemade, homegrown WCW stars, I think of Sting, I think of Goldberg, I think of DDP, and I think of Booker T. And that's it, honestly. I mean, I guess maybe you could say Scott Steiner, but there were not a lot of other names that really were made. Big, big names that were made by WCW. After that, you kind of get into the lower tier guys there, Jericho, Eddie Guerrero. Those guys got an opportunity to be on TV, but they were never pushed at a high, high level until they left and went to WWE. So here they have a guy in DDP who is one of the few truly big names that WCW cultivated and created and who got over. He got over on his own. He had one of the most popular finishes in wrestling. You could hit it from anywhere. It was a great move. He had a great act. He had a lot of fan support. And he was one of only, I believe, two with Booker T, WCW stars who I think, either took a buyout or actually lost money to go to WWE instead of sitting at home, which he probably could have done, and just collected a paycheck from Turner. That's what Goldberg did. That's what Hogan and Hall and Nash and all of them did. Booker and DDP were the only ones who didn't take the money. They wanted to go to WWE. They thought that they could really do good things and big things. And they wanted to go and be part of that and contribute. And then you see how he debuted and what happened after he debuted. He never stood a chance. Are you kidding me? This guy never stood a chance. How can you stand when they cut your legs out from underneath you? He did not stand a chance. First of all, the entire premise of the invasion angle was flawed from day one because they brought all of those guys in as the invaders, right? Heel invaders. And look, if you wanted to do that, then go ahead and do it. But here's why it was flawed. They bring these guys in as the heel invaders from that other company. And yet they made plans to give Monday Night Raw, the Monday Night Raw slot on USA, to WCW. That was at one point the plan. Jim Ross has talked about this. He was involved in some of this planning. Right up until the very end before Vince McMahon, you know, what we saw with Booker T and Buff Bagwell, that infamous match in Tacoma in the main event of Monday Night Raw. And then Vince McMahon just completely blew up all their plans and said, yeah, you know what? We're not going to do WCW after all. But that was at one point their plan. They thought that they were going to make Raw Nitro. And they were going to give SmackDown to the WWF roster. So you'd have a WWF show on Thursdays, and you'd have the WCW show on Mondays. They were going to keep it as a separate brand. And I'm just like, I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking to myself, how do you expect your audience, who you have conditioned for years to believe that WCW is the enemy, they are the devil, they're trying to put us out of business, which Bischoff was trying to do, but doesn't mean everybody else wanted that to happen, but they're the enemy. They're the bad guys. That's all they conditioned their audience to believe for years and years. And all of a sudden, you think these same people are going to go ahead and gladly tune into a WCW-only program with no WWE talent? The whole idea was doomed to fail regardless of what happened with Booker T and Buff Bagwell. DDP should have been brought in as Diamond Dallas Page, the People's Champion character that he played in 97 into 98, not the Jersey Triad stuff, like I said, and all the stuff he was doing towards the end. Forget that. I could tell you to forget a lot of the creative stuff that WCW was doing in late 99 into 2000. DDP is hardly the only one. You bring him in that way. You don't bring him in as some stalker sniffing out the Undertaker's wife's panties. He should have been the guy giving people the diamond cutter and then going into the crowd and throwing up the diamond sign and banging people, or, you know, doing the bang sign. You know what I mean. Oh, well, you know, they put him in a feud with the Undertaker. That's pretty big. You know, the stuff with the Undertaker's wife, that was just a way in storyline for DDP to get inside the Undertaker's head. I've heard that justification before for the storyline. Okay, Einstein, then what happened? Tell me what happened after that. Let's say I buy that premise, that it wasn't a bad idea. It was a little unconventional, but the whole premise, let's say, was that he didn't care about the Undertaker's wife. But let's look at this storyline from a logical perspective here, okay? Let's look at this, and let's say he's only doing it to play mind games with the Undertaker. He got inside the guy's head and it worked. Okay, then what happened? Tell me then what happened. Undertaker gave him nothing. Not a damn thing. They didn't even have a match at the King of the Ring. That wasn't a match. Undertaker just beat the shit out of this guy for a few minutes and then he ran him off. He literally ran away. And they played the Undertaker's music and that was it. And then a few weeks later, DDP is on Monday Night Raw being pinned in the middle of the ring by The Undertaker's wife. Now, granted, it was with an assist from The Undertaker, but nonetheless, I will never forget the visual of Sarah folding over DDP's arms, doing The Undertaker pose, and pinning him. 1, 2, 3. You know, Undertaker may not have had the reputation that guys like Hogan and Shawn Michaels and Triple H had for playing politics or burying people. He's the locker room leader. He's the soul of the WWE. But in this case, I don't think The Undertaker gets enough shit from people for killing DDP. He gave that man absolutely nothing and he buried him 6 feet under. And he deserves to be caught, which is funny, he's an Undertaker, right? But he deserves to be called out for it. He gets a pass because of who he is. He doesn't deserve a pass on this. He deserves to be called out. He pulled the same shit that some of those other guys have pulled with other guys over the years. DDP, when he came into WWE, was 45 years old. He was not a young man. He was not a young man when he started wrestling. He was 35, I think, before he had his first match. But he was 45 years old when he debuted on Monday Night Raw, and he was gone less than a year later because of an injury. I think it was his back, and that was pretty much the end of his career. You had a very short window to make money with this guy. There was no time to mess around. Go back and listen to the pop that he got the night on Raw when he unmasked as the Stalker. He got a bigger reaction than Ric Flair got in Charlotte later that year when he debuted on Monday Night Raw. When Ric Flair, the night after Survivor Series, when they ended the whole alliance and the whole invasion angle, and out comes Ric Flair, right, to tell Vince McMahon that you and I now are co-owners and blah, blah, blah. When Flair came out, I remember thinking, man, that's it. I mean, the guy's in Charlotte. He's in the Carolinas, and this is the reaction that he gets. DDP got a bigger reaction coming out on Raw and unmasking as the stupid Stalker than Ric Flair got in Charlotte later that year. That tells you something. Or at least that's how it came across to me on TV. And they squandered it. He got this huge reaction and they squandered it. And we have to listen to Bruce Pritchard, when he was pressed on this on his podcast, talk about how, well, DDP wasn't over. Because, you know, look, Conrad, I'll give Conrad credit. He pushed Pritchard on this and he's like, well, why wouldn't you just let him come in as DDP, the people's champ and all that? And Pritchard goes, well, because nobody in our audience even knew who he was. Completely ignoring the reaction that he got his very first night in the company. He didn't even have the long hair. He had like the short hair. He didn't even look like DDP did in 97 and 98. And when he pulled the mask off, believe me, people in the building that night, they knew exactly who that guy was. It's like, to be Bruce Pritchard, it's like it never even happened. It's like his feed went out that night and he missed the entire segment. I especially liked his argument that, well, you know, if DDP as that character was so over in WCW, then WCW wouldn't have gone out of business. Two things on that. Number one, he completely shits on every top star in WCW when he says something like that. He shits on Sting, he shits on Goldberg, he shits on Booker T, he shits on DDP, he shits on Ric Flair. That's a lot of shit. He shits on every single one of them when he makes a stupid comment like that. You could say that about every single one of those guys. Well, gosh, you know, I mean, if Sting was so over, if Ric Flair was so over, then I guess WCW wouldn't have gone out of business. Completely ignoring the shit show that was WCW creative there in those last 2 years. It is a dumb argument. You can blame a lot of people for why a lot of guys weren't over at the end of WCW. That's number one. Number two, what if the shoe was on the other foot and Stone Cold came to WCW and they said to Stone Cold, hey, listen, we're going to bring you in, but you can't cuss, you can't drink. Okay, no drinking beer. You can't do all of the things that got you over. But go out there and make it work. Austin is talented enough where maybe he could have gone out there and made it work. But boy, it would have been a lot harder for him, right? Or go tell The Rock, hey, listen, you know, you're going to get half the mic time that you had when you were in WWE because we just don't have time, right? We have a short window, so you don't really have a lot of time on the mic, and you can't do the eyebrow anymore, and no more people's elbow because we don't want you doing that. But go out there and get over. Again, Rock was charismatic enough, he probably could have made it work, but it would have been a lot harder. They would have handicapped him, but I think in the end he probably would have been okay. Those guys are going to have a hell of a time, though, getting over in front of that WCW audience because they want The Rock. They want Stone Cold. They don't want half a Rock. They don't want half a Stone Cold. And that's kind of what they gave them with DDP when he came to WWE. This Pritchard is so far up his own ass on some of these podcasts. It is absolutely nauseating. He should have come in doing DDP the way that he got over in 98. And then what you do is you build to the whole People's Champ against People's Champ thing with him and The Rock. And yes, The Rock would go over. I would not have DDP beat The Rock. Not at all. But I do think that that match had some marquee value. Maybe not the marquee value that Austin versus Goldberg would have had. Not the marquee value even, I think, that Sting and The Undertaker, if The Undertaker were still doing the dead man character, because Sting and the American Badass doesn't really make any sense. There were other dream matches that were bigger than what DDP and The Rock would have been, but I think DDP and The Rock, you know, yeah, I think that could have worked. I wouldn't have done it right out of the gate. You would have built to it. Maybe he does a program first with somebody like Jericho, then he kind of graduates to The Rock, and they could do that match at SummerSlam, you know, in 2001. This is not a year-long build type of thing. This is not necessarily, oh, let's build it to WrestleMania 18 the following year. DDP came in, 45 years old, still had some value. Let's get this done. This is a big match. It's an attraction. The Diamond Cutter is still over. Let's get this done. That's what I would have done. And they buried him for no reason. They buried him. And you wonder why Sting kept his distance from that company for so long and why he was so paranoid and afraid to go to WWE. It doesn't surprise me. Years later, when he's doing an interview, when he says he was concerned. He saw what they did to some of the guys that they brought in from WCW. Some of the silly stuff that they had them doing. And his fear was that they wouldn't be bringing him in to make money with him. They would be bringing him in to prove a point. And to kind of bury him or make him look silly and make it very clear that the WWE guys are better than the WCW guys. Even though Vince McMahon owned the whole goddamn thing at that point. But that's the mentality of some of these people in wrestling. They're so petty and they're so stupid and short-sighted that, you know what? Sting probably made the right choice. I wish he would have come in sooner than he did. Even 5 years earlier than he did. I think that, you know, he had just stayed a little too long in TNA, but I don't at all blame him for feeling that way and not coming into WWE when he did. And when you hear Pritchard and people like that in the inner circle talk about these things, you can understand exactly why he would have felt the way that he did. Steve from Virginia, was Batista ever a draw? Yeah, I'd say he was, considering how he was in the WrestleMania main event with Triple H at WrestleMania 21, and that show did over 1 million buys. And there was no Mike Tyson, there was no big celebrity, unless you count, was that the year they had Akebono in the sumo match with Big Show? Yeah, that doesn't count. Batista and Triple H did big business at WrestleMania 21. If nothing else, there's your example of Dave Batista being a draw. So the answer is yes. And Rick from Long Island, with a buy or sell question. Buy or sell on the more cathartic WWE title win. Eddie Guerrero beating Brock Lesnar or Kofi Kingston beating Daniel Bryan? I enjoyed them both. I had the pleasure of being there live at WrestleMania last year for the Kofi win. And it was the best part of that WrestleMania. You know, it was an emotional thing. There were people in the crowd, you know, crying and celebrating. And it was, you know, it was a big deal. But I have to buy on the Eddie Guerrero win. It was just such a great story going into it, a great underdog story. You came into it knowing his history from WCW to WWE and his demons and all the problems he had. Not just the issue of, you know, maybe him being held back a little bit in WCW, but again, all of his demons and issues and vices. And I think he even incorporated it into his promo, like, I'm an addict, and one of the things I'm addicted to is the rush of the crowd, and, you know, it was so great. He was doing such great work at that time, and the match itself I thought was also excellent. It was a very good match. And look, it was similar to Kofi. There are similarities between the two stories in that there were a lot of people who didn't think Eddie Guerrero was WWE champion material. And there were a lot of people who thought and still feel that Kofi Kingston, not WWE champion material. He's not good enough. But the way that all unfolded in the Eddie match, all of the drama, the big finish, the dramatic finish, the big celebration after him, you know, going into the crowd, and I think his family, his mom may have been there. It was just done better. I thought a little bit better than the Kofi one. I gotta buy on Eddie at No Way Out. If you have questions, keep emailing them to me. I want to hear from you. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. I want more. Gimme, gimme, gimme. More questions is a good thing. I am going to be back with you live Wednesday night, as I am every single week for the AEW Dynamite stream. I have a brand new super chat that I am going to debut. There was something that happened. It was very brief. But there was something that happened about 18 or 19 minutes into the stream on Wednesday that spooked me. And I had people in the chat saying, oh, that's a super chat. And I thought, you know what? You're right. And I mute all the audio. There's no audio on the super chats because I don't want it to be too disruptive to the streams. But I'm making an exception on this one. There is a brand new super chat. It is only for the people. We have people from time to time who are kind enough and crazy enough to drop like a $50 super chat, $65, $75, a C-note. These people are out of their minds. I'm reserving this one for those folks. It's the new $50 and above super chat. I won't spoil what it is. If you watch the stream, you probably know what I'm talking about. So that's going to make its debut starting Wednesday for anybody who decides to donate that amount. But anyway, I will see you then. That's the Fight for the Fallen show. I will probably be back live again the next day on Thursday afternoon with my Extreme Rules predictions. And then next Sunday, episode 661 drops earlier in the day. And then that night when Extreme Rules goes off the air, live again with you on YouTube, including the big Wrestle Rumble giveaway. I'm giving 6 championship belt replicas away. And remember, it's only $1 to enter. You go to WrestleRumble.com. So basically, starting Wednesday, including Thursday and then 2 shows on Sunday, you're getting 4 podcasts from me in less than a week. So I hope you're ready. I hope you're ready for some audio. I hope you're ready for some video. Join me. We'll have a good time. Follow me on Twitter @Solomonster and do subscribe to the YouTube channel. I will see you back here next weekend. Until then, be well. Stay safe. Please stay safe. Have yourselves a great week. And I'll see you back here very soon for more Sound Off. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solomonster sounds off.
I mean, it's similar to the Jeff Jarrett situation. He dropped the championship and then he burned a bridge for many, many years. That's why when WCW went under, Vince McMahon went on television and specifically singled his name out as somebody they would never hire. And now, all these years later, he's back with the company. What we've learned over the years is whether it's Jeff Jarrett or the Ultimate Warrior or Bret Hart or Bruno Sammartino, eventually, they always come back home.
The Solomonster Sounds Off, available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/TheSolomonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow The Solomonster on Twitter @Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Put that cigarette out.
Solomonster Sounds Off.